it's Jeff Blair, host of the new podcast, Writer's Block. If you're hearing this via your primetime sports feed, follow the link in the show description to subscribe to Writer's Block for more great sports talk and interviews from myself, Richard Deitch, and Stephen Brunt. Writer's Block, sharp takes, not hot takes. Thanks. 439 Pizza Nova.
439 Pizza Nova. At Pizza Nova, there's something for every pizza lover. Create your own masterpiece with some of our vegan or vegetarian options that include our dairy-free mozzarella, our gluten-free multigrain dough, and our gourmet vegetarian toppings. Ciao, I'm Dominic Primucci, and I invite you to taste the difference. 439
Pizza Nova. Unconfirmed sources say this is the best show in the history of sports radio. You're simply the best. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome to Writer's Block. For a Friday, October 18th, Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt. Mr. Brunt just telling me the Yankees should go out and sign Gerrit Cole because it's only money.
It's only money. They got lots of money.
Well, that they do.
Wouldn't that solve... What is their problem right now? What is the gaping hole in the New York?
Only one problem.
They need a starter or two?
Houston Astros can wrap up the American League Championship Series tonight, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. And... Man, I mean, where do you start last night's game? I mean, I've got to say this. I just want to throw this out there about last night's game and what we saw with CC Sabathia.
Yeah.
And walking off the mound the way he did, and the reaction of the Astros players, which I thought was, obviously it's appropriate. He's one of the best, you know, one of the best pitchers we've seen. And by all accounts, I mean, he's had some issues. He's had some issues in his career, but by all accounts, he's been a real good teammate and is a really, really popular, guy. But that was hard to watch. Goes without saying. Nobody likes to see anybody get hurt, but there's something about watching a guy when you know he's throwing his last pitch.
Yeah. It was part of
the furniture.
Yeah, and you knew his, you know, this was it, right? He was going to retire after the season. And it's a game, you know, it's kind of a hopeless cause game, right? It's a cold night in New York. It's a hopeless cause game. They send him out there. And I think it was after that, you know, after he got hurt and then he threw the one warm-up pitch and just surrendered.
Yeah.
And when you realized, no, that's not that, that's it. Like, his career just ended a little earlier than he thought it was going to. And you're right. There was a sense with the crowd, I think, and with the crowd still kind of in shock in New York because it's also dawning on them that this is, they're not going to win a World Series this year. But
what does that say about the Yankees, Steve?
Well, you know, it was weird last night watching them. Again, I think that not that the rain out was definitive, but it definitely tilted things. We talked about this, right? It tilted things in the Astros' favor because it got their rotation lined up again, took away the bullpen day. And, you know, Greinke was good enough last night. And the Yankees starting pitching has not been good enough. But they also played some bad baseball last night, which is not something I'm used to this team doing. You know, they're kind of kicking the ball around.
Gleyber Torres' play was puzzling.
Yeah, really. It just that doesn't seem like them.
No.
And the other thing we talked about is that some of their big bats got cold at the wrong time. You know, some of those guys look lost right now. Like Sanchez came back and hit the home run, but he had looked lost. Eddie looks, I say, he's cold Eddie.
That is the way he looks when he's scuffling.
Yeah, and we've seen that, right? God knows we've seen that. And you know, when he's hot, you can't throw anything by him. When he's cold, it's like everything's out of whack. So yeah, they're not an overwhelming offensive team. They're facing a team with really good pitching. And, look, I guess if you're from our perspective sitting here in Toronto, you would say coming off a 100-win season, you know, it's just still pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. Life is good. You lose in the ALCS. We saw the Jays lose twice in the ALCS. That didn't feel completely crushing because you thought, boy, at least they got there and they got as far as they did. But I'm not sure they feel that in New York right now.
Well, no, not at all.
Series is not over technically. No. They could beat Verlander and Cole back-to-back and then get into a Game 7. But
I'm just watching MLB Network. They've got Aaron Boone up there. Aaron Boone knows about hitting dramatic home runs to come back and win a series. So yeah, it's it would be a mistake to stick a fork in the Yankees right now, although I would certainly say that you would be well advised to keep the knives and forks handy, because it is entirely possible that this will be the final game of the year for the Yankees, which begs this question. It's 2 years now that Aaron Boone has managed this team. And I'm not saying Aaron Boone's job is in jeopardy by any stretch of the imagination, but it's 2 years he's managed this team. He's had two very good teams, scored a lot of runs. We understand pitching's been an issue. Steven, they've won 203 games. They've lost 121 in his 2 years. No trip to the World Series.
Yeah, except everybody got hurt this year.
Everybody got hurt. It was a great job.
I still think he's the manager of the year, the American League.
Well, those votes have already been been tallied anyhow.
Yeah, but I think he is. I think he's the manager of the year in the American League. I think he did an amazing job.
It's got to be frustrating for him.
Yeah, they ran up against a team that, you know, there's no fluke to lose to these Houston Astros. And again, we've been except for the fact that the Yankees are being held together by spit and binder twine at various times this year. But you looked at it and say, well, there's the powers. These are the two powers, not just in the American League, but in the sport.
This may be the only team that could beat them.
Yeah,
the Nationals pitching.
Yeah, except that, again, you see it's funny. You start to see the flaws, right? You see the flaws when you don't have, when the lineup is not intimidating offensively, when they make some mistakes in the field, when you can't get to that bullpen. Boy, and the other guys, Ottavino, can they bring him back? Like, there's a guy, I would trade for him right now because, I'm not sure you can ever bring him back in that stadium.
Nope.
And he's really good.
He's very good. And he's a Brooklyn guy.
Yeah.
But
I don't know if you can ever bring him back there.
What about Gary Sanchez?
I've always thought he was a flawed player, but he plays, doesn't play it particularly well, but he plays a premium position. You get any offense out of that position. It's and God knows he's got power. The problem with saying you get, like, catchers are not exactly offensively talented. Catchers are hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
So where would you go? What would you, what do you do there if not him? But it's just that lineup just didn't look like, it really did look like Murderer's Row at times when it was healthy. When you looked and said, Ben, how do you get, and especially with guys like, LeMahieu having a crazy good year and Gleyber Torres having a crazy good year and Jewer Chalas hitting. Everybody, it was like everybody, you put on that uniform this year, you hit. And suddenly, I guess it's great pitching to a degree, but but they just look full of holes. And then you start to look at the rotation and you say, well, Masahiro Tanaka's probably been their best pitcher in the postseason, but you wonder how long that's going to go. Paxton is a talented guy, but flawed and gets hurt. And he won't be, he's a free agent. Severino, they didn't have for most of the year. Obviously got a great arm. There's a guy I think you could still ride, but compared to the other two teams remaining in this postseason, it's not even a contest. So I wonder, the Garrett Cole thing, you just kind of throw it out there. But Garrett Cole would look, if I'm the Yankees, man, he would look really good in pinstripes, wouldn't he?
I was going to say, I don't know if anybody's made more money this offseason.
Yes.
Than Garrett.
It's been a really good offseason for him. Yeah, you're 100% right. Like the money that Marcelo Ozuna lost or other guys maybe lost.
It's all going into Garrett Cole's
him and Rendon, I think. It's been a good fall for both of those guys. So that's what they're going to now. Have they got some pitching coming up in the system? They traded a bunch of guys, right? They traded now. Justice Sheffield hasn't turned in anything yet, and I'm not sure, but
they do have a little bit of pitching down there. I think Loaisca is going to be very good.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be really good, and they'll be okay. But yeah, you have to ask the question: do they have an ace? And James Paxton's awfully good, but you'd be a better rotation with James Paxton being your number two guy.
Or
Masahiro Tanaka, your number three guy. And the thing about Garrett Cole, too, is he's clearly not overwhelmed pitching in Yankee Stadium. It wasn't his best performance, but it was pretty
– yeah, he's fine.
It was good. He got out of the mistakes he made. He cleaned up his own mess.
I don't think – there's any chance they bring Eddie back. Now, again, that's not just about his performance here in the postseason, but you kind of, look at the way that roster is constructed, a one-dimensional power hitter of his age. You know, you really can't play him in the field.
No, and they've got to figure out. they've got a really good young hitter. It's a Pedro in the minors, Pedro Florial in the minors. You've got Aaron Hicks. You've got Giancarlo Stanton. You're going to be trying to find at-bats for a whole bunch of guys.
Yes, and some of those guys are going to have to rotate through the DH, right?
Absolutely. And so, I think Eddie's, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that this is Eddie's last go-around with the Yankees.
And I don't think, you know, and again, he had a really nice power year this year again, and I love the guy. He's a great guy. I think the market's going to be really soft for him.
I'm the Jays. I'm at least making a call.
Yeah, I don't.
I really am.
I wonder, though, Jeff, because he can't play a position. Like, I don't think you can say, well, he's going to be our first baseman for 60 games or something. And you've got other guys who are DH candidates on that team. You might want to rotate through. If you keep a Teoscar Hernandez, you're going to want to rotate him through the DH slot.
I need a bat in the middle of the lineup somehow. And I actually need a couple of bats in the middle of the lineup. And I've got to take a flyer on one guy if I'm the Jays.
Yeah.
Maybe I take a flyer on him.
Maybe. You know,
I mean, I don't bust my ass to sign him. I certainly don't want to get into a bidding war or anything. But
no.
I have a conversation and then have a call and see if he's interested in coming in on a very, very low, low contract.
Because there's two things. One is he is a DH. He is not a position player at this stage in history. Number two, you don't necessarily want to have him when he falls off a cliff.
No.
And we know what that looks like.
Yep.
See Jose Bautista.
Yeah.
So that's going to happen eventually. There's a lot of reasons where, you know, sentimentally and in terms of, you'd say, they just have a big intimidating bat in the middle of the lineup. You can kind of see it, but I can talk myself out of it pretty quickly.
I'll give you a rundown of what we have in writer's block today. John Herdman joins us at 3:00. He is, of course, the head coach of Canada's men's national team, a 2-0 winner over the United States a couple of nights ago. Ben Nicholson-Smith and Arden Zwelling, their hosts of our At the Letters podcast, they will join us in studio. They had an hour sit-down with Mark Shapiro that cleared up a whole bunch of stuff. So we'll talk to the boys about that. And the latest episode of At the Letters, by the way, is out now on sportsnet.ca/podcast. You can listen and, of course, subscribe for free. They'll join us. And Chris Johnson, senior hockey writer at Sportsnet, he'll be along at 4:00. Talk about the update on John Tavares. It looks as if Alex Kerfoot will get the first chance to fill in the hole created by John Tavares' injury, which makes a certain amount of sense because he is. I mean, I really like the makeup of the line he was on, but he would seem to have the appropriate skill set and the ability to play up. Playing with good line mates, so I'm fine with that. I'm fine with him at least getting the first
shot. I
think
his name's in there in pencil though.
It's Mike Babcock. Yeah, it could be in pencil just for the warm up. And at 2:26, Kim Coates. You know him. He's an actor on Bad Blood. He's been in Goon, Sons of Anarchy. He is in town for the Rally for Kids Scavenger Hunt, or Rally for Kids Scavenger Cup in Toronto, which is in support of the Pinball Clemens Foundation. He'll be along and he'll answer the question, who is tougher, Mayans, MC, or Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah, he would be the guy to answer that.
Yeah, which is tough? If those two shows had a brawl, who wins?
I like that. Okay.
You don't have a take on that.
You don't have a
scalding hot take on it?
I do not have a scalding hot take on that, no. I'm just mulling that one over right now. Mull.
Anyhow, Kim Coates will be along, as you mentioned, at 2:26. I'm looking forward to Ben and Arden because part of their conversation with Mark Shapiro dealt with Mark Shapiro's future here.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm not going to give it all away, but he's very clear that, one, he wants to stay here. Two, he has been approached about jobs. Three, he has not interviewed.
Yeah.
And that includes, he admits that he was approached, or the people who were trying to fill the Big Ten commissioner's job spoke to him.
The headhunters, right?
The headhunters did not offer him the job. He did not interview for it. He's very clear about that. So Mark Shapiro will clear up some of the stuff surrounding that.
Look, nature abhors a vacuum, but the sports media doesn't. You know, like a vacuum, you can fill it with all kinds of things, right? Sports conversations. So, you know, in the absence of him saying definitive, and again, whether that's up to him to stand and say, by the way, I'm not leaving. I'm not taking a job. You know, it's kind of like a plane landing safely. It's not news.
It's a good way to put it. It's true. Yeah.
But a lot of stuff has swirled around. A lot of kind of rumor and innuendo has swirled around about his future, about Ross Atkins' future. You know, you reported here a couple weeks ago that Atkins...
Because nothing's going on right now.
That's right. Yeah, and nothing much is going to go on for a while. And again, I always thought unless I was missing something, discontent either on the part of those guys or especially Mark and the part of ownership, that there was no compelling reason for them, like the job's not done for sure. And, you know, they're kind of mid, you know, and they will be assessed and, they will be marked on their progress a year from now, 2 years from now, but now doesn't make any sense, from either side. I said a lot of stuff has swirled around, maybe people will not believe what Mark told the boys, but, I can't control that.
No. Again, since Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins got here, specifically since Mark Shapiro got here, you can only tell people that you have had nothing but, you've had nothing but good dealings with a guy. You can only tell them that so long before you just decide, you know what, if you people aren't going to believe it, I'm just not going to bang my head against the wall. People didn't want to believe Mark Shapiro the day he showed up here.
You're correct.
Period. I'm not casting that. Let me rephrase that. There is a segment of, and I'm going to say mostly the local media, even more than the fans. They did not want to believe Mark Shapiro as soon as he showed up. And it's a battle they're never going to win. Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins could win a World Series, and I swear to God, there'd still be people who'll say, well, it was an accident. Yeah. And that's just the way it is.
Well, it is worth it. I said, is it worth it? Yeah, it is worth it. The fall before, the fall before the 2015 season, ownership moved to replace Paul Beeston. Mm-hmm. That went public. It was embarrassing, right? It was embarrassing for Paul Beeston, I'm sure, but it was not well handled.
Thoughts about that, though. They did everything the right way. Unfortunately, Jerry Reinsdorf opened his yap.
Correct.
They wanted a guy working for Jerry Reinsdorf, Kenny Williams. The only way you can do that is to ask Jerry Reinsdorf permission.
Yes. Now, Jerry Reinsdorf is also Paul Beeson's best pal.
I know, but...
I'm just saying, the fact that it went public was embarrassing.
Right.
Right? It was embarrassing for Paul Beeston, who was a long-serving employee of this team, and it was just... And that set some things in motion. Yeah. It set Alex Anthopoulos looking around saying, uh-oh, things are going to change around here. The guy I work for is going to be gone, and I'm on real thin ice. I'm not saying that's why he was as aggressive as he was in 2015, but it had something to do with it because he knew that things were going to change. But it also kind of set the stage that whoever was going to come in to that job as the replacement, that there was not going to be a nice, orderly transition. It was going to feel... it was going to be awkward. Mm-hmm. Now, if the Jays had scuffled in 2015, had not made the postseason, it would have been way less awkward. Alex Anthopoulos would have been fired. They would have brought in a new general manager, and everybody would have said, "Here's a new era, boy. They haven't been in the postseason for 20 years. It's let's try something different." But of course, that was a magical year, and emotionally, it turned into something really, really special. And these guys, Mark Shapiro shows up that fall, and it's like walking into a party you're not invited to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's exactly what it is. And emotionally they were never going to win. 2016, they were back in the postseason. It's not like they had nothing to do with it, but they probably had as much to do with it as Alex did getting into the postseason with Atlanta last year, right? Mm-hmm. He inherited a team. Everybody inherits the last guy's team. And they made some moves that helped, and then they did not tear it down immediately after being in the postseason because I don't think you could. Do you think anybody would want that? The ownership would want that? And and Mark was kind of forthright about that when he said it's not an intellectual exercise. If it was,
we'd tear it down.
We'd tear it down. They probably went 1 year too long. But even if they pulled the plug in 2018, the guys you are now watching play on that team would not have been there. You know, it's not like Bo Bichette would have been there a year faster. So I think it's turned into a personal thing for some people. I think there's some lingering resentment. I think Alex Anthopoulos didn't like some things about the end of his tenure went. I don't think he and Mark Shapiro meshed as personalities. I think that's an understatement. We normally assume that a guy coming in wants his own guy. That's kind of the natural succession, but usually you don't come in the middle of, the first success in two decades. I think there's voices out there that are not rooting for these guys to succeed.
Yep.
So, but you know, again, Jeff, they will be judged on whether they succeed and whether they win by everybody in the end.
Yep. So we do look forward to our conversation with Ben and Arden at, that'll be at 3:25. And we will talk to them about their takeaway from their hour sit down with Mark Shapiro. We mentioned the Toronto Rally for Kids Scavenger Cup in support of the Pinball Clemens Foundation takes place on October 18th and 19th. That would be today and tomorrow. Of course, the Pinball Clemens Foundation, no stranger to the show, no stranger to the station. Kim Coates is here for the Rally for Kids Scavenger Cup in Toronto in support of the Pinball Clemens Foundation. Kim Coates is coming up next. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt. Jeez. Kim Coates joining us. You threw me for a loop there. Kim Coates joining us in studio. I was wondering where that was directed. So big day for you. You're in town, by the way. We'll mention you're here for the Rally for Kids Scavenger Cup in Toronto in support of the Pinball Clemens Foundation. Yeah. You got to meet Brian Burke.
I did. I just spent 20 solid minutes with Berkey. He gave me his cell phone number and everything. I'm in.
You are in.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good guy to know.
He's a really good guy to know. He says it the way it is. I'm a big fan. McLean and Tara Sloan, we talked about that. I did hometown hockey.
Hometown with them, right? Yeah,
our pals. And you guys. I'm starting to pick you all off now. It's all good for me. Little Canadian boy coming home.
Well, welcome, man. It's good to have you.
And Berkey's a big fan of Sons of Anarchy.
Yes. So
there you go.
He knew the show better than me, boys. I'm not kidding.
Super fan, yeah.
I'm not surprised that he's a fan of Sons of Anarchy.
No, that does kind of...
truculence.
That lines up. There's a lot of truculence on that show. That's correct.
And here I was all set. I was going to ask a witty lead, and I was going to say, who would win if the Sons of Anarchy had a fight with Mayans MC?
There he is right there, Berkey. He said, see ya, Bri. That's so awesome.
Who would win if Mayans MC had a fight with Sons of Anarchy? That's what I was trying to
say. I don't know, but I hope the Mayans does good. Yeah. I haven't seen one show. I wish them all the best. You know, John Landgraf is my guy over at FX, and he just does such quality stuff. Did you hear Kurt Sutter got fired yesterday? Did you hear that?
No.
Yeah, he's gone. Poor Kurt. He's out. Anyway, Sons of Anarchy, the Mayans. I don't know who would win, but boy, that was a wild 7 years.
It was a great run.
Thanks.
It was a great run. You had fun doing it, huh?
I mean, you wouldn't if you didn't
do it that long. But
I got to tell you, my wife was just Diana. We've been married 35 years. It's kind of a miracle in Hollywood. She just was so happy when her husband Kim Coates decided to do television. Like, I've done arcs on TV,
right?
But I was a movie guy. I just didn't want to be a regular. And I finally said yes to Sons. And I had no idea about the power of TV.
Yeah.
No idea. Mm-hmm. I really did not. I mean, I was before that. I was, you're that guy in Black Hawk Down. Oh, you're the guy from Waterworld.
Yeah.
Oh, you're that guy from Pearl Harbor. Right? But when you do one successful TV show, and it was a huge hit, they know Kim Coates now and Charlie Hunnam. Everyone knew Ron Perlman before and after. Everyone, that's a face that only a mother can love.
Right.
How does it change when you're working in television and working on a series? How does the rhythm of your life change compared to
you get a paycheck every week?
Well, I got friends in the business. I do know that part.
I'm kidding.
That,
yeah. Like yeah. It was, I was so unafraid to fail. My whole career has been, I've worked really, really hard, boys, And I just always knew it would work out, and it did. But I never worried about money. I still said no to the things I didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. But, boy, you do TV for 6 months, it's a good thing. When it's really good, it's a really good thing.
Yeah.
And then you look forward to saying goodbye to the team.
Right.
You know, every November when it was over, but you couldn't wait for the next May to say hi to everybody. And we hung out all the time. We got along.
It's got to be great. I was going to say, it's got to be great for a lifestyle too, though, right? Because you're in one spot for the most part, correct?
We were in L.A.
Yeah.
It was, so you don't it was have great. To, yeah. It was just great. Yeah. The studio was an old Chips. Remember that TV show,
yeah.
Chips? Our Teller Garage, that whole studio, was an old studio that Kurt Sutter and FX found. And there was cement and there was old buildings. It was the perfect biker clubhouse hangout.
Right.
That's where we filmed it all. I mean, not the exterior stuff, but the inside stuff.
Yeah.
I just got to mention today, we're talking about it off air, but you know, you came back, you did back on the stage here.
Oh, yeah.
What, 18 months ago, 2 years ago? Like, what? I'm trying to think what the time, but to do Jerusalem, which was a crazy great production.
Thanks.
At Crow's Theater, you know, that was really
Company
something.
Theater, Outside the March, Outside Phil Riccio, yes. Mitchell Cushman.
Yep.
Chris over at Crow's. They sucked me into doing it. You saw it.
Yeah, it was
sold out.
Mind blown. It was a really, really great production. And it was thrilling. You know, well, live theaters, I don't know how anybody does it. I don't know. It's got to be like, you know, working without a net sometimes, but.
For sure. And some plays are different than others, obviously. But I met Sir Mark Rylance, right? I had dinner with him in New York.
Yeah, who originated the role, right?
Correct.
And he's pretty good.
He's pretty good, all right.
Yeah.
When he found out that Jez Butterworth had actually given, I remember when Mitchell and Philip tried to get the rights, it was Jez Butterworth's people who said, if you get Kim Coates to play Rooster, then you can have the rights. And they did. But I took a year. I went to Pusey 5 times. I went to London to study with Claire Davidson vocally 5 times over a year. I had dinner with Mark Rylance, and he looked at me, and he's a little guy. He's like arguably the greatest, stage actor of his generation, and maybe like he's that good. And he looked at me and said, "You're going to be brilliant." And I went, "Wow, thanks, man." And we just talked and ate and talked. He was so happy. And then when we won all those awards, and we email all the time. So it's really nice to give back like that.
And that was your first stage appearance in Streetcar?
Yeah, in 27 years.
Yeah.
It's 27 years.
So it had to be the right role
well,
for you to do that, right?
Or was it? I might as well lose my mind and do something like a Rooster Johnny Byron, right? I mean, yeah. If I'm going to come back, I might as well do that with the accent.
Scary coming back to the stage, though?
Frightening.
Yeah.
I said to Mark, I said, I'm kind of, we can't swear, right?
No.
I said to Mark in New York, I said, I'm kind of scared poopless. Let's call it poopless.
Yes, yes.
And Rylan said, I must tell you that when we moved the play from the West End to Broadway, it was a 6-month wait. I didn't sleep well one night. I was scared poopless. So whether he was completely honest with me or not, it was so nice to hear a thespian brilliant man like that say, this part should be scary. You should be. It was a massive undertaking. It's the biggest, you know, one of the biggest. Amazing.
So you're in town for the Rally for Kids Scavenger Cup in Toronto.
Correct.
In support of the Pinball Clemens Foundation.
www.rallywithkids.com. Pinball Clemens, you know Pinball. I mean,
hard man to say no to.
Is there anyone like him in the world? I think not. I mean, boys.
He's a good spirit.
Holy cow, is he good spirit. And I met him last year and his beautiful wife, Diane, and their beautiful kids. And yeah, you hop on that train and you raise a lot of money for those kids who don't have the upbringing or the wherewithal. And Pinball cares about the community so much. And every dime we raise is for those kids to get through school and buy books and help them out and go to college maybe or just get an incredible job to give back to society and one that they'll love. And Pinball is just full of that. And we're here for that. And we have these incredible, very rich philanthropists tomorrow that we'll spend a whole day with. We have like 15 to 20 celebrities coming.
It's a car rally, right?
It's a car rally. It's a scavenger hunt. We go to, you know, I can't say where we're going to go because they don't really tell us, but we'll go to a cop shop and we'll play games with blanks and we'll go to the fire hall and jump from a ladder through fire wearing the suit. We'll go to Air Canada and be in a simulator and try not to crash a plane. Like, these are insane things to do, but there's points given, and it's so much fun.
And you'll be a celebrity navigator, correct?
I think I'll be a celebrity. I think, yes, I will. Yeah, I will. And I will say this, that the greatest part of all, hey, boys, is all the kids are sprinkled throughout all these places that we stop at. And we take pictures and have fun. And I cut down the Argos. I'm a Rider fan, as you may or may not know.
That would make sense.
That would be the green Riders, the real Riders. Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm busting there, you know what, all day long. But Pinball, general manager, he's come back. That could be big.
Mm-hmm.
Could be better.
Yeah,
I think he'll at least, yeah, I think he'll have his finger on the pulse of things.
How is this town, lads? How are the Leafs? How are you feeling?
John Tavares' fingers.
No, there's panic.
It's a big discussion point. Yeah, yes, we can do a whole segment on John Tavares' finger if you'd like. Yeah. What's you are a Saskatchewan guy. You mentioned the Riders, but what's in your sports DNA?
I'm a hockey guy.
Yeah.
I'm a hockey guy my whole life. Leaf fan. And then I was 7 and I found out that Gordie Howe was born in Floral, Saskatchewan, and came home and said, "Dad, is that true?" And he goes, "Get in the car," in a black, I don't know, one of those stupid cars back then. But at least we had a car. And I hopped in the back, Edsel, I think, and we hopped in the back, and we went to Floral, which was like a 15-minute drive, 20-minute drive. And, of course, he wasn't there, Mr. and Mrs. Howe. No one was there. But we said, that's where he grew up. And so I became a Red Wing fan overnight. But I'm a hockey fan. You boys know. I know a lot of the Hawks and a lot of the Ducks. And
Do you go to a lot of games in LA?
No, but no? Playoffs I will.
Okay.
So many players, like Saskatchewan, punches way above its weight, right? You know, like that's like there's
I
a
think
long
so.
List. Well, no, it's true. Like there's a huge long list of guys.
We've got a million people, right? You know, boys. It never really goes up, never really goes down. Stays at a million. Braden Shen. Mm-hmm. I'm doing another big charity with Saskatchewan Stars, the Pegasus Project. So I'm working on that with Vaughn Wyant, an amazing guy from Saskatoon. He keeps giving back. We're raising a lot of money for a couple of new helicopters there, and Braden Shen jumped on. So I met him.
Yeah.
They won the cup. I mean, St. Louis won the cup.
Mm-hmm.
How does that, Berkey and I just talked about that. They're in last place January 3rd.
It's a great story. It's a great, great story.
Isn't it?
Yep. It's good. You need that kind of thing to happen every once in a while so you know it's possible.
They won it all.
Yeah, so, you know, so in the middle of the season when your team's nowhere, you
right?
can say, you know what? It's those guys
back
did it.
Back in 2018-19, the St. Louis Blues did it.
How'd they do that?
And they beat them right in Beantown. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah, it was pretty
I loved it, Boston. I loved it.
Big Saskatchewan. There was big Saskatchewan content on the team.
Yeah,
they brought the cup home, right?
Yeah,
they did brought the cup home. So.
You bet.
What do you, now that you've had these, as Steven mentioned, I mean, you've won a lot of awards for your work in the stage. I mean, you've got a hit TV show, two hit TV shows. What's that impact? How has that impacted your life in terms of just being able to be out and about?
Great question. It's a great question. I actually can't really go anywhere anymore now. Trying to get into this building. Did you hear what happened down there?
No.
I almost lost a leg coming through those beautiful little things, taking a selfie. That didn't go over very well. Go! What do you mean? Snap, boom. Like, those things are killer.
Oh, the doors. The Maxwell Smart doors. Yeah,
they are. We have a cone of silence falls down. That's the worst. That's the worst thing. Yeah. We haven't had that happen yet.
Yeah.
It's about the only thing that hasn't happened to this show in the past week, to
true.
Be honest.
That would
really?
Be true.
Yeah, yeah. We've had a week.
We had some technical issues.
Yeah,
did you?
We're just off air for a little while.
Yeah.
It happens, right? Not a big thing.
Did you go to Timmy's? Did you just take
no,
a day
No, we
off
just kept or... talking. The idea is you keep talking when you're off air because you never know
when
you're
going to
be back on.
Yeah. The last thing you want to do is be throwing stuff around and swearing. And
that's right.
So, no, we got it. We managed to handle it, I think.
Yeah, we did. So your daughter's going into the business too, right? She's in the business.
Brenna's in the business.
She was in that. And so what advice do you give?
She, you know, people say that all the time, knowing how tough it is in the business.
Yeah.
And I stumbled into it in college at the University of Saskatchewan, took an acting class for fun. I hadn't seen a play in my entire life, didn't even know what theater was. And it all worked out. But Brenna, my little one, she's been an actor her whole life, and she's done it the right way. It's all theater. She auditioned to get into NYU. She got in. Tisch Acting Academy, right? 4 years, got her degree.
Mm-hmm.
She's already won an Obie and a Drama Desk Award for a play called The Wolves, which went right to the Lincoln Center after the Duke. 2 years on that run, just massive New York Times.
That's the one about
the nine soccer players.
The soccer team,
the girls,
yeah. That's a great
did
piece.
Did you see it?
Yeah, that's a great piece.
Yeah, it was a really great piece. She was the originator of number 7. Anyway, good. And now she's, she's here in Toronto with Adam Stutt over at Gary Goddard. She's got a big agency in the States as well, and she's starred in her first big movie. Of course, it's a horror movie called The Color Rose. It's got to be a horror movie, your first film.
My daughter works at Gary Goddard, by the way. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
Say hi to her.
Yeah, so she's...
She'll know Brenna.
This is what happens with theater kids, right?
Yeah.
Why does it have to be a horror film? Is that just...
Because it just does.
They're fine.
It's just a prerequisite.
Okay, all right.
No, you know what it is?
What?
Horror films need young kids. Horror films need the young, good-looking, bad-looking, good-looking kids who are going to do stupid things.
Yes.
And Brenna's part of a incredible cult. There's seven of them who do stupid things.
Like,
and
it's like not get in the car and leave when they're supposed to, right?
Yeah.
No, let's go to the basement and see what's going on down there.
Yeah. And they do. There's a basement. Oh, yeah. They shot in Kelowna, The Color Rose. It's going to be an amazing little film, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's let's find the most dangerous thing to do and just be attracted to it and go do it.
100%.
And go do it. What's your, what's the best thing you've done? Theater? Like the thing that gives you the most satisfaction as an actor? Theater, TV role? Is there a particular role that you just look at and go,
No. My fans know this. They're sick of hearing it, but I really don't have any favorites. I really don't. I mean, there are points. Like the youngest Macbeth ever at Stratford, I was 26. That was a point.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to Broadway, right? Stanley Kowalski. I was the eighth Stanley ever on Broadway after Brando. That's a point. Dracula in Atlanta, Les Liaisons Dangereuses in Louisville, Kentucky. Those are all. Then Hollywood, Last Boy Scout. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Willis, cigarette. They show that scene in acting school everywhere of how to steal a scene from a star. Bruce is a really good buddy of mine. I haven't seen him in a few years now, but that was a step, right? So I've had these steps along the way. Sons of Anarchy, Waterworld, I got my green card. So my family got the green card from that. We're all citizens now of both countries, Canada first, obviously. So I've had steps, but I'm now producing Bad Blood, producing with Mark Montefiore, co-producing with Rogers, Netflix, big hit. I'm proud of that. Mm-hmm. Canadian story.
Mm-hmm.
Canadian actors, right? We as Canadians need to be proud. And I think it's a different show. It's a dark, twisted, beautiful first season, all based on truths. Second season, not so much. It took off with me, Declan Gardner, made it up a little bit. Michael Conavis, the showrunner, did an amazing job. We're negotiating a third season, fingers crossed. Can't say anything yet, but there's more to tell on that show. So... that's what I love doing. I love producing now. I love starring in things. And you know what, boys? I took the summer off.
Yeah.
I haven't taken a summer off since maybe ever. I took the summer off because Bad Blood wasn't filming.
It's interesting hearing you say there's more to tell about that show. That would suggest that there's some more, there's still an organic thing about doing this as opposed to, okay, this is the script, this is where we're
correct.
Going. There's still,
there is.
Is it stuff that you, when you started this project, that you were thinking about, or is it as the project went on, do you kind of go, okay.
Another great question. I got to tell you the truth. It was really Rogers. We were literally just starting. I got Anthony LaPaglia to do it, Paul Sorvino, just some great Tony Napo, great, great Canadian actors to do that first. That, it was a six show, that's it. We're done. It's based on the book, true story, here we go, done. And it was Rogers who said, no, why don't we go off with Kim? Why don't we go off Declan? Let's keep it going. So we ended it the way we wanted to, maybe not even knowing if we were doing a second. We did the same thing with the second season.
Hmm.
It's eight shows. It's longer. It's darker. It's even better. We've ended it where it could end, but Declan, my character, says something. This will be over when I say it's over. So we're not done. But it's an expensive show. It's an incredible show. It's completely, people love it around the world. Howard Stern wanted me on his show. He's Bad Blood. The guy, you know, the guy from Sons of, it doesn't even know my name. He can't even say Anthony LaPaglia's name, but he loved the show so much. So there's more to show on that show.
It's great of you to join us.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
It's a lot of fun.
Beautiful. Pinball gives his love to you boys. Really, honestly, we've done so much press today. Thanks for having me. And it's really, really great to talk
to
both of you.
No problem. It's the Rally for Kids Scavenger Cup in Toronto. Kim Coates, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, boys.
We'll be back with more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. Need a leg up in your picks? Oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Oddshark.net has those too, and it's free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks, whether you want to get it on the football action, tonight's hockey game, or anything in between. Go to oddsshark.net. This is not a gambling site.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
going to get around to this at some point. But, again, I hate to keep making it sound like all I do here is watch the MLB Network. But I do have it on. We've got a TV where I can see what I'm screwing up. And then I've got a TV, MLB Network.
MLB Network's great, by the way.
MLB Network is great. They are, God love them. I was wondering when they were going to show this. They are replaying a documentary on Blue Monday. yes, they are. Rick Monday's home run. It was the Expos' best chance to go to the World Series. It is the most infamous game in Montreal Expos history.
Yes.
Steve Rogers, starting pitcher, came in to pitch in relief. No big deal now. We see it all the time. It didn't work out. Rick Monday homered.
81, right? The split season?
Yes. There you go.
Split season.
So God love our friends at MLB Network for getting us prepped for the Washington Nationals World Series run by showing us that. I gotta think about that. We talked about that, whether or not that's going to be a storyline, whether anybody's going to mention it. I mean, it'll be mentioned, but
yeah,
I don't know. We got to get somebody on from Montreal to see if it resonates. Seriously, maybe it does. Maybe there are people there who are going to be cheering.
You know that crowd, though, right? You know the hardcore Expos crowd. I just don't think so. Those guys.
I guess what I'm getting at.
They won't rise to the bait.
Well, yeah. That is, people are going to be talking about that.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty deep wound that will be picked at.
I guess. Yeah, I guess it will.
We need to get David Sampson on to talk about it. That's what we need to do.
Speaking of picking wounds. Oh, yeah. Speaking of picking wounds, yeah. Well, maybe he can get his stepfather on or whatever.
I love Samson, but every time I get him on, I get texts from friends of mine in Montreal
saying, "Why do you have Satan on your show?"
Cheeseburger Ralph sends me a sends me a shout out to Cheeseburger Ralph sends me an email all the time.
Yeah,
and there you go.
No, that's speaking of things that wounds that will not heal.
That's probably
like, and you were a guy, again, I would say you were one of those people who was fair to Jeffrey Loria.
Yeah, because I saw it coming, because I wrote when he came over, I said, here's what's going to happen. This is a guy who lost the battle for the Baltimore Orioles.
Yes.
In what do you call it? It was an auction. It was a court-ordered auction.
When Peter Angelos got him.
Yeah, when Peter Angelos got him. And the idea that he was suddenly going to come and be prepared and take his $12 million investment and work with the folks in Montreal, he bought that team to buy it and move it, man.
Well,
and it was like
worked out as it turned out to shuffle and wind up with the ownership of a completely different team
and win a world team.
Yeah, and it worked out. Yeah, yeah. And is it because it does? Look, good things happen to good people, right? I'm with you, as you know.
Yes.
I was always also tried to be fair to Jeffrey Loria.
Because
I just wouldn't blame him. Like what he did, it's not attractive.
Steve, if you and I had the money and we were looking to buy a baseball team and move it to Hamilton.
Yes.
We would have done it that way. Would have been you might have been a little nicer. But I mean, that would have been the in we were looking for. It basically brought a distressed asset.
Well, it's what Jim Balsley tried to do, right? When speaking of moving teams to Hamilton, that's what he tried to do with, first with Pittsburgh and then with Arizona. Yeah, no, it's a logical way to do it. It's the easiest way to do it in some circumstances. There aren't as many distressed franchises out there anymore.
No.
But yeah, and as I've said, again, ad nauseum probably, so I apologize if people have heard this before. Jeffrey Loria was not the disease. He was a symptom of what was wrong in Montreal.
Yep.
He was not the actual disease. The disease was mismanagement, disinterest, rot.
Yeah.
Right?
And at the end of the day, a complete and total lack of any sort of political support at any level.
Yeah, that's
at
right.
any level.
Yeah,
it's that simple.
No, the foundations had eroded. It wasn't there anymore. And, I'm not sure whose fault that is, but... he was just an opportunist.
So get ready. If you're listening to us in Montreal, get ready for lots of Rick Monday on your TV set. And Steve Rogers.
One of the low moments in Jays history also involved a starting pitcher coming into a playoff game. Dave Steep.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, against the Kansas City Royals.
That's right.
Wind-blown triple to right field against KC that put that game away. The series that had it still been a best of five, as it
that's
had been the
right.
year before,
it
they would have won.
Before.
And they would have won the World Series. And I still think that's the best. That team was as good as the two teams that won the World Series. So, yes, don't bring, well, everybody brings starters in now, right? Yeah. As you said.
It's a thing. It was fun having Kim Codes in here. We really appreciate
it. Yeah, that was a blast.
Again, it's the Rally for Kids Scavenger Cup in Toronto. It's a great, great event. Go to www.rallyforkids.com for more information. John Herdman is coach of the Canadian men's soccer team, 2-0 winners over the United States earlier this week. John Herdman's next. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
To put their name on it. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So we'll have Ben Nicholson-Smith and Arden Zwelling in studio in the next segment. They have an hour-long At the Letters podcast up, or I should say an At the Letters podcast up as a result of an hour-long interview with Mark Shapiro. Having caught a little bit of it before I came on the show, very revealing interview as well. And as always, you can get the latest episode of At the Letters at sportsnet.ca/podcast. So the two co-conspirators will be in.
Excellent.
Let's see. I'll take him through to the top of the hour, too, because we've got a lot to talk about. We've got to talk about the postseason as well. As we mentioned, Yankees and Astros tonight. The Astros can put a bow in the American League Championship Series, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Sportsnet, Justin Verlander pitching for the Astros.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
dot, dot, dot.
It might, like, who knows, right? It's baseball. The Yankees could win tonight.
Yeah.
Just kind of hard to see them winning three in a row.
Like, yeah,
maybe really hard to see it. Yeah, it's yeah.
Aaron bleeping Boone.
Ask the folks
in Boston about Aaron Boone and comebacks. And the only thing is, I'm not certain Grady Little's managing this. Houston just really, when you get to see that team repeatedly on night after night after night, it's even the same thing when you see Houston in a series, and you watch them play. You just come away thinking they do so much so well. There was a play last night with Jose Altuve. You know, it's the old play. You're caught off third base. You're caught between third and home. But, I mean, he was out. Runners advanced to third and second. It was just – and you know what? If that had been the Blue Jays, we'd be raving about, my God, great base running, great play. The Astros, it's just assumed that that's going to happen.
It's a high baseball IQ team, right? And that's something – like, again, I'm not sure if that's something you draft and develop. It's where does that come from? Because there are great athletes and great ball players who don't think baseball particularly well.
No,
you see it all the time, right?
Absolutely.
But yeah, they are. It's gonna be not skipping too far ahead, but that's gonna be a fun World Series.
Oh, I think there may be some twists and turns to it as well. Well, we had this gentleman on before Canada beat the U.S. 2-0,
and as a result of that,
as a result of that,
John Herdman being here before that match, and being encouraged and taking some tactical advice from you, Jeff, I believe Canada won.
Tactical advice? What was my tactical advice?
Go out and beat them, I think, or something.
Take your fastest guys and make them run.
Yeah, kick the ball in the net.
Canada's men's team did beat the U.S. 2-0 and have left themselves in really good shape for the task ahead, getting into the World Cup in Qatar. John Herdman is the head coach of the men's national team, and he joins us on Writer's Block. Hello, Mr. Herdman.
Hey, team.
John, how are you? I got to tell you, I was, watching I was at that game, and Jeff was up in the press box, but I saw the some of the clips from afterwards, and when you were pumping your fist and yelling into the crowd, I could read your lips, John. I agree with your sentiments. Not that we can repeat them here, but I'm absolutely with you. I believe I was shouting something very similar with my kid in the stands that night. So congratulations, my friend.
Yeah, you can take the boy out of Newcastle, but you can't take the Newcastle out of the boy.
Yeah, that was a very Geordie moment of you. Yeah, that's good. It was good to see, man. It was good to see. But that was, I don't know what it felt like from your perspective, but I know what it felt like being in that crowd. And that that was a very emotional, you know, a sport at its best is a very emotional, uplifting thing. And that was there were 17,000 folks there, which, you know, and I wish there'd been 27,000, but all of those 17,000 people, their heart were beating at once. It was, it really felt tremendous being there. What did it feel like when the referee blew the final whistles and you knew the match was over?
Oh, just relief. A bit of relief that this team finally took the step that we knew we could. Grabbed the therapist, Janice, and I haven't cried much in 20 years, but I had a few tears. Because it's been a hell of a ride, Steve. You know, people have questioned me, association. You know, it's been a tough ride. My kid has to sit on the internet, and you know, he's in football as well. I've got a teenage boy that has to take shit off his friends, you know. And yeah, it hasn't been easy. So that moment, it was a bit of just relief, and yeah, definitely relief. But then just the excitement for the group that we did it, you know, 34 years, and they committed their minds and they produced the result that for me is the new foundation they stand on.
You know what? Was really, I think of all the things that I heard after the match, John, Lucas Cavallini, and you know, God love him, we knew exactly what he was trying to say, but he was in the mix zone, and he just said, and it was so simple, it was so beautiful. He just said, "Today I saw a new Canadian soccer. I saw a new generation." And I remember coming away thinking, you know, when the players know that. You know, when the players feel so moved by it that they feel as if they have to tell you that. That's not something you always get in a mix zone, John. That cuts really deep, I think.
No, I think the emotions were high. I mean, that's coming from a guy the night before the game who's taking a role in the team that's pretty alien to him. He'd started every match for me. And from to sit there and say, look, whatever it's going to take, I trust the process and we're going to get it done. And what he promised us coming off the bench is that he would score. He told us, you know, in that 30-minute period, I'm going to score. And I said, look, the only thing I'll promise you is coming off the bench, you'll be on the winning team. You will be on the field when that whistle blows. And he said, hey, I'll be the guy that scores the winning goal. And he did. It's amazing when people commit their minds. And Osorio had been out in the press prior, like he'd almost, you know, said that this is going to happen. And I keep saying to this group, for too long, we've not had to be brave enough to actually say we're going to get the job done. Mm. And I think the boys have done it. They committed their minds, and that's what it can happen.
Were you able to do everything you wanted to do in that match? And what I mean by that is also you've got a return match in Orlando, as you mentioned. You've got some things up your sleeve for that. But tactically, emotionally, all of those things, in addition to winning the match, John, were you able to accomplish what you as a coach wanted to accomplish in that match?
Yeah, it took a big shift in the camp. You know, the players weren't... you could sense there was some pushback on pressing, you know, for 90 minutes. And, you know, the players needed some definite encouragement in that, you know, to see the stats that they've pushed out when they've played in top games in Europa League matches, you know, the amount of kilometres of high-speed runs they've made, that they could do it. And then just building the whole camp around Orson Swetmarden's Iron Will. That was the whole theme of the camp. A 1902 piece of literature where every day we took a different quote and then aligned it to things that have happened in history, just to get the mind ready for what was going to be you know, a real physical output from our team and to push them somewhere they maybe not been in a red shirt before. So that was the biggest, you know, accomplishment. I think they did something together, and not they knew if one man wilted in that 90-minute period, the whole team would wilt. And they stuck to the task. They pressed the USA. They stayed high up until the last 7 minutes where we turned the press off. It was, yeah, look, it was, as a coach, it was watching the whole shift. And this had happened a week before. We'd had the leadership group, a video call, you know, driving that conversation about a mindset and a will is what will make the biggest difference, because we felt on paper the talent was there to do this.
John, it was every bit a team victory, and I'm not taking anything away from anybody else in the squad, but could you just talk a little bit about Alphonso Davies? I don't think in my lifetime no one has worn our colors that has the skill set that kid has. It was electric. You know, Jeff and I talked about that after the match. You know, every time he touched the ball, it was like the whole stadium was on its feet. You know, he's spectacular, and we're just scratching the surface. He's so young. What do you see when you see him?
I just see that type of player that can change a game. He can literally change a game on his own. But I think that the biggest challenge with Alphonso is you don't see how good then Jonathan Azorio is. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a top midfield player, but it's those flashes where a guy can beat three players in one moment that everyone gets excited about. They don't see that the subtlety of the pass in the last minute and the composure to find his roommate Cavallini. You know, they don't see, you know, Scott Arfield's ability to take up spaces. And, you know, it's almost like I'm hoping this team really can start to show everyone's qualities. And I think that's what came about on that evening. I mean, Alphonso, look, he had a wonderful performance. But I think, you know, you look at Kamal Miller, who he was incredible. And Richie Larea, third cap for Canada, and he's marked Pulisic out the game and impacted. So I think if some teams would have to say and keep talking about that one person, but I think what we've started to build now is a really balanced team that there's assets all around the pitch. And I think Alphonso, it's good because now we don't have to say, if this kid doesn't perform, Canada doesn't perform. You know, we've got a group of men that are confident in the peaks of their careers. And we can even leave top players on the bench.
Without giving away any strategic secrets, is Alphonso's best role in this team someplace in the middle of the pitch? Or, you know, do you have a preference?
I think he can play in a number of positions. Again, when we've played him at fullback, it's in games where, you know, teams will put up a deep block. Mm-hmm. And when he's played at fullback, his stats are through the roof. He's assists and he's creative passing. And then a team where, you know, it is more equally matched, you've got to put him closer to goal. And you've got to put him in areas where, you know, the team's prepped to try and deal with Alphonso. So you move him into areas where those players aren't ready for him. And I think that's an ongoing evolution that, you know, you have to find. If you're just going to play him out on left wing, you know, he's going to come up against a DeAndre Yedlin who will raise his game because he can. He plays in the Premier League. He plays against top opposition every week. But if Yedlin can't find him and Fonzioni appears on Yedlin in transition and in moments where he didn't expect it, then that's a new proposition. And I think that's the tactical excellence I've seen evolve with Alphonso and Bayern. You know, that goal he scored against Tottenham was exactly that. Just understanding how to play in more central areas and the timing of movement from there. So, you know, I think he's just getting started, as one of you have said. And this camp for me was about him showing that with everything that's gone on in his football life, he can still bring it.
What do you expect in the return match? You're going to obviously, you know, the Americans are going to be at home. That loss for the Americans seems to have set off a bit of a crisis around their program. I think you've got to assume that their level of commitment is going to be high in that match because of that. There's going to be a lot of pressure on them. And meanwhile, your guys are flying high, right? Feeling great. How do you kind of set the right tone for your guys heading into Orlando?
Well, you know, I've been messaging the leadership group this morning and saying this is the real test coming, because we always knew this was going to come down to willpower this first game. But now you've got a wounded animal that's got a lot to prove. Like, we were fighting for respect. We were fighting for a lot of things in that game, World Cup qualification, everything. We had about six different angles of motivation. You know, the US didn't have a great deal of motivation in that game. It was almost theirs to lose. And I think coming into this one, they're fighting for respect just like we were, and we know that's going to bring that extra percentage out of each one of those players. So for us, this is what we wanted. We wanted to be taken seriously. We want them to raise their game. We want us to then have to raise our game and then to see if we can take it to that next step, because going back to back against the US, I said this all along, that second game was the biggest one, going into their territory and being able to beat them on their soil. That'll be the moment that really does cement where this team's at and where it's going to.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you before he let you go, is there any update on Mark Anthony? What is his status going forward?
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, what a rock that kid was. I mean, I've said this all along. Came into the leadership group in the Cuba camp, and he was on the high of his experience at LAFC, and he just brought a level of accountability to the group. And, you know, even on him coming off the field, he was in the dressing room, you know, driving some of the younger players. I mean, what a personality. But I think the critical thing for Mark is his MRI came through this morning. We haven't had the information on that yet. His club will obviously be assessing that first, and
right,
he'll take responsibility of updating everyone. But, you know, fingers are crossed, and, you know, I think that's his. We just hope he can come back for the rematch.
Yeah. John, listen, we really appreciate you doing this, man. Thanks so much. Again, heartiest congratulations. And we'll talk to you ahead of Orlando, man.
Hey, Stephen, make sure you get us on the show prior to the game. My good luck, John.
Okay.
We'll have to do a double ender, maybe a little Skype action.
Yeah,
so we'll talk to Richard Scott. We'll set it up.
Yeah, tell Richard that's a necessity, okay? Thanks, John.
Brilliant. All the best.
Take care,
all the best. Bye. John Herdman, a very happy man. And, you know, look, a lot of pressure on John Herdman. I mean...
But he threw it out there. Look, he again.
Oh yeah.
The thing I loved about this was he's saying, like, we've got to prove it. It's on us if people don't believe in us, because they haven't had a reason to believe in us, and we've got to perform, and this is the game.
And I think he also knows that there's still a lot of people there that are wondering how a guy moves from coaching women's soccer to men's soccer.
It's true.
I mean, we're not, because then we know the guy.
Yep.
And I actually kind of operated under the assumption that at some point he would be a candidate for the men's job. But I'm sure there are people out there who are looking at that.
I think the point is they would have lost him, right? He would have gone somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. I believe it was England. England or New Zealand.
So he was going to go. And look, they've gone down a bunch of other roads with this men's side over the years, and none of them have worked. So this one's looking pretty good.
Hey, look who's here.
Look who's
here. Tim McAuliffe from Tim and Sid. How are you doing?
I wanted to crash the show to say what a good job that was with John Herdman.
Well, it's hard to have a bad interview with John Herdman.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he?
He's not a difficult individual to interview.
He is rather smooth. Do you buy it all?
Yes, because I've seen it. I'm going to say yes, because I saw it work with the women. They saw it work with the women's team in the Olympics. I absolutely saw it work.
But we talked about, we had him on before. John was on before that U.S. match, and he was in studio, and he's, you know, it was like, it's like a spell, right? You're just going to say, I'm a charming man. Where would you like us to, what clip would you like me to walk off? I'll do it for you.
Right.
And I said to Jeff after, I said that, you know, that was amazing, but, you know, do you believe it? Right. I watched Canadian soccer for long enough, and I think, you know, that it was great. Like, but watching that performance, yeah, like they really had opportunities to lose that game and didn't, right?
Yeah,
you know.
But that's the Canadian soccer fan in me is the one going, okay, so this is a wonderful win. It's a really big win for the program. But the last time I saw you out, you lost to Haiti.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
work in progress.
I know, and I understand it, and I see the talent, and I follow the talent, and you're like, okay, it's going to be there. But I also follow Canada basketball, where I see the same sort of things being floated out all the time, and then it never comes to fruition. So this is a little bit of fruition. And then I got a co-host who walks in.
I was going to say, speaking of fruition.
I was just going to say, great job with the interview. That's all. I got to pee. I'm busy. But great job with her.
Got to Well, it's
hard.
But yeah.
But it's Sid Sixero, by the way.
He's one of the better interviews out there.
You were there. Yeah, so you were in the stands, too. I know you were there.
The whole Sixero family, including the mystery third Sixero.
By the way, the mystery, just so we're clear, because our WhatsApp chat blew up when you guys spoke of the mystery Sixero the other day.
Yeah.
His name is Nason Sixero. He's a mortgage broker in Mississauga.
Okay.
He's also, I got to be honest, he's a little crooked in his dealings.
This is going to want to see me throw him for a loop. Watch this. Did he find his car keys?
He didn't. No, it wasn't him that lost the car keys.
I thought I could throw you.
Someone in the Sixero clan, six of us were walking through Section 116 looking for someone's car keys, who I won't announce on radio.
I shouldn't listen.
We didn't find the car keys.
I shouldn't listen to Alex's phone conversation.
You know what we did find? 2-0 Canada, that's what we found. Boom!
See,
let's go.
I've heard you emoting, but I know. Yeah. And That was to be in that crowd was, I completely believe. I know they could go to Orlando and get beaten, and they might lose to Haiti against
McAuliffe. I'm getting scared.
That was a convincing win.
Well, if they play Alphonso Davies at left back, yeah, they might lose to Haiti again. That's the one aspect of what John's done that I just did not agree with. I know Bayern are going this route in terms of him being a defender. For Canada's purposes, though, that doesn't help us.
Well, I think,
how does that help us?
Yeah, I think John made the point about he thinks there are certain matchups where it can work. But, you know, I'm with you on this. I mean, the reason Bayern's doing that is because they're trying to find a spot for him to play. So they're doing it out of a position of strength.
He's politicking with Bayern. That's what he's doing. He's playing the game.
He should go out on loan in January. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The best thing for Canadian soccer would be to have him go to like Cologne or something like that.
Okay.
And play a lot.
Can we honestly say most exciting player in Canadian history?
I mean, other than Garrett Kush.
Paul Pesce Salino.
We're deep diving on Canadian soccer now.
Do you know how many Canada matches I saw waiting for Paul Pesce Salino to score a goal? I never saw him score.
Bunbury,
but Steven, like, and you guys talk to it with
the hell's this?
Don't get McAuliffe started.
Okay,
he'll do. Listen,
are we
all love
to do that?
He does more Vic Reber impressions than anyone.
I love Vic.
But there were, and you guys brought it up with
Carrizzi.
when Davies was square up a defender, the whole South stands were up, and not just the Voyageurs.
Yeah,
like it got everyone. Everyone knew that defender was in trouble, and I've never seen a guy wearing red and white doing that to other teams.
Here's the one question they have for the whole table and the audience. Sixero had a huge boner when they went to Honduras.
I had to call a doctor after 4 hours.
And Arash Madani sweat through his shirt.
Yes, yes.
And it was a colossal disaster.
I was on the studio show for that, yes.
And I was bandwagon. I was there. We were doing the show. Tell me how this is different.
I'm still trying to figure out how we went from Arash's sweaty shirt to Sixero's boner. I'm a little concerned.
I think there's more of a connection than you think.
People throwing things at Arash Madani in Honduras is how I remember that. Yeah. Because number one, we're talking about a world-class talent who's 18 years old, right? Like, let's start with that.
And don't leave Jonathan David out of that.
The 19-year-old he was playing with.
Yeah. Well, that's right. No, I get it. I'm not saying it's – and it's not one guy.
No, no. Yeah.
It's not one guy. And, but that team in Honduras, like, that was a horrible place to play and all that. But they did crumble, right? They crumbled. It was awful to watch.
You could see it.
And so, when John talks about all leadership groups and belief and all of this, you know, that's so you don't crumble. Right. That's so you go to a crappy place like Honduras and it's a terrible thing and people are throwing stuff at you and you don't fall apart. I guess we'll see. But the talent.
But John also brought it up in terms of like 20 years ago, Junior Hullet plays every minute of every game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was on the bench to start that game Tuesday.
But
he's
a perfect guy to bring in for 10 minutes at the end of the game.
He is. But it's a valid. I thought it was a great point that this. Old school Canadian teams don't have a guy like that on their bench.
And you know what else I thought was really noticeable? The other thing you're seeing with a Canadian team, with this Canadian team in a win like that, it wasn't just the guys, the really uber talented guys that came through. But I mean, John mentioned Richie Lauria, who scared the Americans. I mean, his speed just flat out scared
them. Vittorian Cornelius in the center of the defense.
Yeah.
Like they looked like rocks back there. I mean, it was just and USA for the amount of criticism they're taking, they were putting some pressure on towards the end. They were at least getting some balls in. Canada had to be a little careful about it. I just think depth wise, it's different, and you can't play Alphonso Davies as a defender. It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Boys, what do you got in the show coming up?
That was my best stuff right there.
He's done.
I'm done. I'm out.
He's got
done.
Nate. You got Nate Burleson.
The great Nate Burleson.
Yeah, Nate Burleson. This is going to sound really bad. When did Nate Burleson become so good? Because he is one of.
I think when he started going on your show, right?
I think we kind of struggled.
No, but Nate Burleson's become, like, seriously.
Superstar, yeah.
No, but we joke with him now every week. This is probably the fourth last time we're talking to you. Because you're blowing up.
Well, he is.
Like in the entertainment world, and just Good Morning Football is one of the best shows out there. And he's been great with us. So it's always a joy to have Nate on. The exact moment, I don't know. I know what you're asking.
Yeah, it's
He is just an amazing on-air talent. Yep. An amazing on-air talent.
Last week he spoke to Pacino before he talked to us.
Nice.
Because of course you would. Right? Yeah,
right. As one does. Yeah. And Matt Devlin will join you guys as well, right?
And hijinks. There'll be hijinks, right?
There'll be hijinks.
Best of the week. We got some good bests of the week. We got some strong candidates this week.
All right.
Great interview with Herdman, boys.
And less boner great talk. Interview. Sorry.
Thanks for visiting.
Less boner talk.
Less boner talk.
I apologize.
All right.
Stop banging on the table. Get out.
Sierra, take care. Tim and Sid, they're on from 5 to 7 still.
They are. They will
after
be.
After that.
Yes, sir.
The word boner hasn't been mentioned that much on this show. I just did it again. Anyhow, we appreciate Tim and Sid joining us. 5 to 7, Nate Burleson. Not kidding. Great NFL analyst. He joins him, of course. Matt Devlin, one of our favorites. Ben Nicholson, Smith and Arden's Welling, a new edition of the At the Letters podcast, has dropped. An hour-long discussion with Mark Shapiro. The boys will join us. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan at 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
A reminder, your team could be playing in a game called by Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the first annual Champions of Rec League Cup. If your team was nominated, you've been tuning in every weekday, no doubt, to hear if we announce the team's name. You can also enter online for a chance to be the wildcard team. Alex, why? Why do we got to get this? Alex Giltoridis. If I mispronounced your name, I'm sorry, but I know you're in Milton. You nominated the Raiders, and you captained the team, the Raiders. If you're on the team, Raiders, you have 590 seconds to call us at 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590 to qualify for the voting round of this contest. You can find all details at sportsnet.ca/590.
I think you butchered that. I'm just guessing. Let me see it.
You read it. We've got Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith here, so why don't we read out? You read the name.
Giltoridis.
Okay. You read it, the name. This is Ben Nicholson Smith.
Alrighty. Yeah, I'll go with Brun Giltoridis.
I'll go with Brun. Okay. What did I say? I said Giltoridis, didn't I?
I'm not sure.
Where is it?
Arden Zwelling.
I don't even know where it is. Oh, Alex Giltoridis.
See? Anyhow.
Very Greek, I'm assuming.
I'm assuming. Anyhow, you've got 500. Whoever you are, you got 590 seconds to call back. Your team's the Raiders. You live in Milton. That's all you need to know. All right. Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith joining us. The co-conspirators in the At the Letters podcast, which the one that just dropped today, a lengthy interview with Mark Shapiro in which he admits that he's been looking for work and that he's on the verge of leaving the Toronto Blue Jays, correct?
Is that what he said?
Everything I'm hearing is that he's already left.
Yeah. He was pouring gasoline around the office.
He was, yes.
Yeah. Matches.
So, no, all kidding aside, it was revealing in that, yes, he has had people talk to him about jobs. He does not appear to have interviewed for a job. The Big Ten job, it sounds as if there was a headhunter thing happening. You guys did the podcast. Ben, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear that, right? Because there's been so much speculation about Mark Shapiro and what comes next for him as he enters the last year of his contract. And basically, you know, the way he put it was he doesn't know with complete certainty that he's going to be in Toronto beyond the completion of that contract. But he sounds like someone who expects to stay here. And he sounds like someone who has had opportunities to go elsewhere in the past and declined to even interview. So that kind of tells you, if he's not even interviewing, then he's not looking to explore those possibilities beyond a cursory look
right.
and phone call.
And Arden, he's a smart enough guy that if he thought his ass was grass, he'd be talking to people.
And when you, yes, and when you are entering a negotiation period, it makes sense to say, well, actually, five or six other people have been interested.
Darn right. Yes.
Yep. So you can see why he would want that out there. But it is interesting because we hadn't heard that before.
No.
He's been approached five or six times, and he's said, no, thank you. Like, I'm good. I don't want to interview. He hasn't pursued those options. So, and look, it's a rather toxic climate around him in Toronto. If he were to cut bait on Toronto and to leave, it would be totally understandable.
Oh, yeah. He would not have to explain it to me. Let's put it that way.
He wants to stick this out and see this thing through.
Yeah, no, I've asked him about that, about, you know, just because he arrived here and no people didn't know him at all, but because of the circumstances of his arrival and what had happened, kind of, and he brought his family here, moved mm-hmm. to the city, and he's a bad guy, and no one's ever met him. I said, but I don't get the sense, guys, that, like, I think he would acknowledge all of that. And I don't think he's kind of doggedly saying, I'm going to prove something here. But I do believe he thinks he's in the middle of doing the job he was hired to do, right? And that I don't have any, you guys can weigh in on this, but I don't sense any loss of faith from the people who employ him. Not that they necessarily tell us stuff, but I don't sense that he's on the clock with his employers right now.
I don't sense that either. I think something will get done, like Ben said. Like, I think there will be an extension. I think there should be an extension. Like, any, you know, suggestion that Mark Shapiro should be relieved of his duties, to me, is asinine. And it's absurd. This is not the time to do it. It has been, what, 4 or 5 years? You made a great point the other day, actually, on this program, Brunt, about, mm-hmm. you know, during the kind of mid-90s and aughts when, you know, other guys were in that seat and the Blue Jays were not going to the postseason year after year after year, you didn't have these same calls for heads to roll.
Not for those heads. No, like, you know, managers got fired, general managers got fired, but the president, there were only two guys who held that post. You know, one was Paul Beast and one was Paul Godfrey.
Right.
And I don't remember anybody calling for either of their heads.
So I think you want stability at the top of your organization generally, but particularly when you're in a rebuild process, and particularly when you're where the Blue Jays are now in the midst of it,
right.
To make a dramatic change right now, it's not going to move you forward. It's going to set you back.
See, I think part of the thing, and there's nothing that Mark can do about this, though, but if you look at the timing of the moves, most people view Mark as the guy who replaced Alex.
Yes.
Ross is kind of, I don't mean this in a negative way, but Ross isn't necessarily the guy that got rid of Alex. To a lot of people's mind, Mark is a guy that got rid of Alex, even though Ross is the general manager.
You're right, yeah.
And that's, I there's nothing you can do about it. That's just the way it is. But I guarantee you there are people out there who look at it that way.
Well,
Mark got Alex.
And I think that's because, you know, again, remember Alex was a pre-existing condition when Mark arrived. They did talk, and it was, you know, for reasons that I'm sure both of them would have a different version of it, but that was not something, you know, they did offer Alex an extension here in the end, the ownership did, you know, which would have been awkward probably, to say the least. So people, I think people's perception that Alex left because he wasn't going to work with Mark Shapiro or Mark Shapiro didn't want to work with Alex, that's accurate.
Yeah.
I think that, so, you know, in that sense, but the job, he fills the role that Paul Beeston filled, not the role that Alex Anthopoulos filled.
Exactly.
I think it's a question of process and systems when it comes to Alex and Mark. Like, the way Alex Anthopoulos operated under Paul Beeston, vastly different
than
how the Blue Jays front office operates now. And I'm sure Mark Shapiro laid it out for Alex Anthopoulos. Like, look, this is how I want to build out my front office. And these are the processes I want us to run. We're going to be more collaborative. We're going to have more guys in the room. Like, you're not going to be at cafes in Brampton making trades for David Price. You know, like, we're going to do this in a much more systematic way. I'm not saying there's one right way or wrong way to do it, but it's a very different fashion of doing the business of baseball operations. And I'm not sure Alex thought that he was going to be able to exist in that after operating the way he did for as long as he did.
And of course, that creates the difference in perception around those guys too, because you look at someone like Alex Anthopoulos, who's this maverick general manager going out there, and like Arden said, he's meeting with players at these cafes in Montreal and trying to swing these deals in ways that are, it's really like a romantic way of deal making when you think about it. It's not the modern systematic way of bringing up the spreadsheet and weighing the checks and balances and figuring out, okay, yes, we will make this deal or no, we will not. And that's like the way that most teams make deals now, or basically every team would make deals now. But it's certainly not as fun as the GM who's just out there having fun and playing it like it's his fantasy team.
Well, Ben, like, think about the salary deferral discussion that one spring training around Irvin Santana. Like, can you imagine, like, again, and I know why he did it, like, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, et cetera. But can you imagine that happening now?
And how badly that would play.
Yes.
I mean, that would, if we think that those guys are unpopular now, they would be way less popular if they tried to have people pool their money to sign Irvin, well, whoever the equivalent of Irvin Santana.
But I think Alex was in a situation, you know, not necessarily all of his own making, that where he did have to fly by the seat of his pants sometimes.
Right? No, of course. And he did it well. I mean, the results speak for themselves, not only here, but in Atlanta. Alex is a good GM.
I empathize with the fan, too, who is like, I like this idea of the one maverick guy who is the gunslinger. Right? Like, you know, so much of what we've seen with modern MLB front offices is kind of this corporatization of it. You got all these Ivy League types coming in talking about process and structure.
You used to know who you could blame stuff on.
Exactly.
You used to. It was easy to blame stuff on a guy.
Yeah, you don't even know. You don't even know who to blame when a pitcher gets you out now, right? It's a collaborative decision. But it kind of come down from the analytics guys.
Fans love to bitch, and it's easy to bitch when you know who to bitch at. Now, when you are complaining about a group, that's not as... You know, that there's not the same thing as hammering the one guy.
And we talked to Mark about that, how there is no one decision maker in the Blue Jays front office. Like, it really is collaborative. You got Mike Murov, Tony LaCava, Joe Sheehan. Like, you've got
Ben Cherington.
You've got a host of analytics folks that, like, you know, you run off their names and fans have never heard of them before. Mm-hmm. They're all in the room at the trade deadline, at the draft, free agency, war rooms. Like, they are participating in those discussions in a meaningful way. It's not just Ross Atkins walking in and saying, we're getting this player and that's it.
You guys have, we've all talked to Mark. You guys have talked to him a lot. Did you detect any difference in tone or sentiment or anything in this conversation, Ben?
You know, I didn't. I think that he's pretty remarkably consistent, you know, almost to a really impressive degree. Or I don't know if fans would necessarily be impressed, but I'll say remarkable how consistent he is, at least publicly and certainly in the private conversations that I've had with him. So, no, I didn't detect any change in tone.
No, I mean, the thing that I've always understood about Mark is that he's a developer, you know, and he is a very, he is a guy who is kind of in love with learning. And he is a guy who's very learning focused. And you can look at the books on his desk and the quotes on his walls in his office and some of the theories and people that he talks about. Like, he really believes in learning and getting better and growing and developing. And that's why the Blue Jays have become much more of a player development focused franchise in the last 5 years than they were prior to his tenure, because that's really his focus and his drive. And he stayed consistent with that throughout his tenure.
Well, and a consistency, like, and this is, and I've had this argument with people because, you know, people, I think he's been saying the same things, you know, again, with you guys in more depth than this one and probably a little more intimately than in some cases, but I think he's been saying the same thing since he got here. I don't think people wanted to listen to them necessarily.
No.
Yeah. And sometimes got caught up in the language and the, you know, and the demeanor and kind of just turned their ears off. But I think he's been saying exactly the same thing since the day he arrived here about what they were going to do and how they were going to do it. I'm just not sure people wanted to hear it.
Yeah, a large portion of the fan base has an extreme misconception of him, and there's many reasons for that. But you can even just look at the way people talk about Mark Shapiro in the baseball industry and then the way people talk about him in Toronto. It's so vastly different. Like, people throughout the industry, I'm sure you hear it, Ben, and like you guys as well, that people throughout the industry are like, why does everyone hate this guy? Team's not winning. That's a good reason. Yeah. But like, he is viewed very differently throughout the industry than he is in Toronto.
Now, you know, there's going to be a rubber hits the road moment, you know, and
sure.
I know it's, you know, Mark would talk about process and you know, like there's not going to be, he wouldn't attach a deadline to anything or say this is when this is going to happen. But you know, where do you think we are in the arc, you know, of what these guys inherited coming in 2015 and 2015, kind of where they've gone, and you know, are we looking like is the pressure point for him 2021? Is it 2022? Somewhere in there?
I think it's 2021. I think now we're in the middle of it. You know, last year was kind of the beginning. You could trace that back to 2018, certainly. But last year was the first full season we saw it hit probably a low point, we would hope. And I think now we're entering the middle of it, where they're going to be probably a middling team. I think we can reasonably expect 75 or 80 wins next year, assuming they go out and add a little bit of pitching, which is very doable, and there's no excuse not to. So assuming they do that, middling team, and with a chance to be better than that, going into 2021, then yeah, of course they should be contending at that point, in my opinion.
So a year from now, heading into the next offseason is going to be that's a big moment, right?
A very big moment.
Yeah.
See, I think that, I mean, individually, I'm not going to say that everything is based on one player. But I think one thing that has to happen this year, and if it does happen, will go a long way towards sort of settling the fan base, is if Nate Pearson comes up at some point and contributes. Because that, you know, I think a lot of people look at Vladdy, was can't miss, Bo, can't miss. Pitching, there's such a thing as a can't-miss pitcher, but pitching's, it's a different thing being a can't-miss pitcher and a can't-miss position player. If Nate Pearson comes up and is good, he doesn't have to be great, but if he comes up and is their second-best pitcher, third-best pitcher, then I think that has a big impact on what people think of next year. I really do.
I think he'll be on a Rogers Center mound in May or June, and yes. I think he'll be exceptional. I really do believe he's going to be very good. I think that beyond Nate Pearson, the Blue Jays need a success story from an Anthony Kay
right.
or a TJ Zoik or whoever.
But
Nate
Pearson, if they show that they can develop a pitcher, which is something this organization hasn't always done,
yeah.
if they show that they can develop a pitcher.
A guy who came as the compensatory draft pick for the Edwin Encarnacion. It would
yes.
be kind of a nice loop there.
Makes a difference.
Yeah.
I just think they need someone beyond just Nate Pearson. I'm already assuming he's going to be good. Really. Mm-hmm. I am that high on him. Like, I think he's going to, it's the same things I saw in Bo Bichette. Like, I really think he's going to be very good. I think they need somebody else from this group beyond him, Thomas Hatch, whoever, to emerge as a candidate to be a regular.
Yeah, not to be great, but to be a major league rotation piece, like a guy who actually is a three or a four.
Because the Blue Jays don't have their Kevin Biggio of the pitching side.
No.
The guy who went from org guy to, oh, hey, you can be an everyday mm-hmm. major leaguer. They need that success story on the pitching side.
They kind of need found money on the pitching side. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith, continue our discussion, talk about whether or not we may see playoffs expanded. Mark Shapiro is part of the competition committee. And we'll deal with that. It's Writer's Block with Blair and Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
They're rewriting afternoon sports radio one word at a time. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Reminder that Toronto FC will play their first round playoff game on Saturday at BMO Field against DC United. Wayne Di Rosario scheduled to join us.
Wayne Rooney is going to be in town, huh?
Wayne Rooney's in town, yeah. All you paparazzi types, get out there. Get some pictures.
So this could be his last MLS game then, right?
He's returning to Derby County after the season.
Yeah, but if they lose.
Is it a two-legged playoff or one?
I think it's a one-legged playoff, isn't it? Well,
that could very well be. It could very well be.
The Wayne Rooney era in MLS could be coming to a close.
Yeah, such as it was. Well, give him credit. I mean, he didn't come over and pooch it.
No,
he
had more left than Frank Lampard or Steven Gerrard or a variety of other guys who came over as their retirement project. So yeah,
not as much as the great Zlatan.
No, Zlatan is still kind of Zlatan.
He's the man.
He is fun.
He truly is. He truly is the man.
Just ask him. He'll tell you.
Of course he will. Derek Brando is saying he might be going back to United. He's way too smart to do this.
What's United? So no Pogba this weekend, right? Who else is hurt? Is
De Gea. They have Liverpool right where they want him.
Yeah,
right where they want him.
Lulled them into a sense of false security, right?
You know, and it's going to be anyhow. We just may not watch that particular match. Our friends at St. Louis Bar and Grill were kind enough to drop off some wings for us.
Yes.
And I think I've left about five for people. A reminder to rack up your wings. The wing and rib combo is back at St. Louis Bar and Grill from now till October 31st. You can enjoy their original wings and grilled back ribs for only $17.99, served with their signature golden fries. I have some of those here. And their famous garlic dill sauce. Plus, you can enjoy a 23-ounce Devil's Pint of Alexander Keith's Michelob Ultra, Budweiser, or Bud Light for $5.99. And in support of Autism Awareness Month this October, 50 cents will be donated for every 23-ounce Devil's Pint of Keith's Michelob Ultra, Bud, and Bud Light. All proceeds will go to support local schools for children with autism. Additionally, and this is kind of a cool feature, if you donate $5 at St. Louis Bar and Grill, you will get a coupon card with over $30 worth of savings. Don't forget to visit www.stlouiswings.com/pieceittogether to purchase your ticket to their annual gala in support of autism awareness on November 7th as well. So there you go. We appreciate our friends at St. Louis Bar and Grill. Devilishly good. The Toronto Maple Leafs will take on the Boston Bruins tomorrow night. No John Tavares, the first of at least 2 weeks without the Leafs captain. We know that the initial plan, at least, is for Alex Kerfoot to move up into John Tavares' spot, along with, I believe, Mikhaev will be on that line as well. William Nylander will take John Tavares' spot on the first power play unit. Chris Johnson is our senior hockey writer with Sportsnet. Chris Johnson joins Stephen Brunt and myself in Writer's Block. CJ, thanks so much for doing that. I did get that right, correct? That is the initial plan for life after Tavares, or life without Tavares, such as it's going to be?
Well, as far as we can tell, yeah. I mean, Mike Babcock was a little non-committal today about how long he'll keep what the formation was at practice intact. He said he guarantees it'll start the warm-up that way. So I think that it'll be a bit of an evolving creature. But, you know, one of my first impressions of, you know, 6 or 7 or 10 games, whatever it ends up being, of life without John Tavares is that there'll be a little bit more thrust on Auston Matthews' shoulders, both from his own coach, but also just from attention from the opposition, because, you know, clearly it's a little different of a matchup choice when the Leafs are down Tavares.
Hey, Chris, I know NHL teams are not want to provide detailed medical information about their players, but is that like the 6 or 7 game 2 weeks? I think the original thing they said was that they would reevaluate in 2 weeks. Do we know anything about it? Like, obviously he played through the injury at the end of that game, which doesn't, you know, which suggests, a reasonably simple break of his finger. But do we know anything else? Is that a kind of a best guess deadline, or is that, do people feel pretty confident he'll be back in 2 weeks?
I got the feeling it was best guess. You know, John was pretty clear, Stephen, that he would almost like to play through the injury, but that they, you know, in consulting with the medical people, that there's just not a lot of value in doing that, I would think, especially at this early stage of the season. And so, you know, they're going to be patient with it. And that the fact that they've said 2 weeks and then reevaluated, you know, to me, leaves the door open to a longer recovery period. We've seen fractures typically, you know, some go as long as 4 weeks or a little bit more before they're deemed fully healed. And so, you know, I think it'll be a little bit of a test of how quickly the injury heals up, and he can convince the team's medical staff to let him back on the ice. But, you know, Tavares was pretty clear. He doesn't like missing any games. He hasn't done so the last 2 seasons in the NHL and really hasn't missed too many throughout his career. And so, he'll be pushing to make that a quick recovery, and we'll just see how much they can hold him off.
CJ, bearing in mind that it isn't carved in stone necessarily, that, you know, that Mike Babcock, I'm sure, will keep open the possibility of shuffling players around. Is it surprising that, and maybe this says more about John Tavares' importance to this team, but that instead of simply taking somebody like, let's say, Jason Spezza and moving him there, you subtract from other lines in order to address that, you know, the shortfall that's going to be there with John Tavares? Or, as I said, is it just because that's, you are replacing a key player?
Well, it's that, and to me, it's what I deem to be improved depth down the Leafs lineup. You know, I think that this year, more than the last couple, that they've really got some nice players playing on the fourth line and options, you know, when injuries arise. I mean, in this case, Jason Spezza is coming out of the press box after missing the last 3 games to join the team. And you know, they've got more cards to play, you know, for the bottom spots in the lineup. And I think that that's allowed them to get a bit creative with what they're doing with the lines now to start. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to me that they didn't touch the Matthews line. I would guess that that's just a tip of the hat to how good that line's been this year. It's
right.
It's definitely been their best line from, you know, through the first 8 games of the season. And so, you know, you're not wanting to mess with that success, but willing to tinker below them. You know, I think that it's a bit of both, because let's remember John Tavares and Mitch Marner haven't been quite as productive at 5-on-5 as we saw last season. And we don't know if that's because Zach Hyman's been injured or just the sort of things that happen that, you know, you can't just pick up right where you left off. But, you know, that line hadn't been, you know, clicking at the level I think that the players want and the coaching staff wants. And so, you know, with Tavares now going down, it's given them an opportunity to rethink, I think, the second, third, and fourth line, you know, all in one process.
CJ, what are the, you know, Hyman I know is close, but what's the timeline on him? What's the timeline on Travis Dermott at this stage?
Well, they both have another week until they can come off the injured list with the rules around that. So, you know, the earliest we'll see them play is next weekend. And, you know, I would think, especially in Dermott's case, that he'll be playing then. You know, Hyman's been skating as well, but I'm not sure if he's quite as far along in his recovery. You know, that'll be something we'll have to kind of sniff out here in the coming days. But, you know, you're not going to see either of those players back before next weekend. And once they do, actually, the Leafs have some salary cap maneuvering to do to activate those guys. And you know, essentially, the Coles Notes version is they won't be carrying extra players at that point. They're going to have to send a few players down to the American Hockey League. And those will kind of be interesting decisions when it comes time to make them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You know, how do the dominoes fall then? Like, you're talking about roster depth at that point, but you know, in terms of, and in order to make the money work, who are the guys most likely to be on their way out?
Right. Well, a couple of things that I still think it should be considered depth, because what they've done is they've built, you know, basically a first line with the Marlies that I think could basically be interchangeable with the fourth line with the NHL team, just because of the amount of players they brought in the off season. You know, what the decision is going to come down to, and I'll try to keep it as simple as possible because it's hard to illustrate it on radio, but you know, four guys that are on the roster right now would have to be sent down when Dermott and Hyman are activated. You know, two of them I think are probably automatic decisions, and Nick Petan and Kevin Gravel, just because both have already cleared waivers and can be sent straight to the AHL. They've both already been with the Marlies this year. I think where it gets more interesting is the other two choices have to come from a group that probably includes four players. I'd say Dmytro Timoshov, Nick Shore, Jason Spezza, and Martin Marincin, that two of those four guys would likely have to be sent to the AHL as part of activating Dermott and Hyman as well. And you know, that's a tough call. I mean, Timoshov has played well. He's, you know, been in the organization. He's young, 23, 24 years old. He would need waivers before he could be sent down, so there'd be a risk of losing an asset there for nothing. You know, similarly, Nick Shore would need waivers, as would Jason Spezza. And obviously, we've talked a lot about sort of Spezza standing with the organization. You know, I'm not saying by any stretch that they would send him down. I don't know how that would fall, but he would at least be in the conversation on the bubble when it comes time to make that decision. And you know, obviously that'll be one we're all watching closely, just because of the kind of career he's had and the way things have gone for him since he signed with the Leafs.
Is it, you know, he's going to be centering the third line, it sounds like, during the shuffle. So how much is that going to depend, you know, that decision, how much is it going to depend on what he does over the next, you know, or during the next week, I guess, is what we're saying, right, until those players are activated?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly can't hurt. You know, I think if he's going to have it, you know, it's not to say that that'll be the only determining factor. I mean, I feel like you have to make these decisions with what's best, you know, to help the team win in the short term, but also the long term. And so, you know, I think that's where some of the thought on Timoshov in particular will come in, just because he is still a relatively young player and might be more susceptible to being taken from another team. And so that's all part of the maneuvering. And you know, this is going to become a common topic for us through this year. I mean, once Dermott and Hyman are healthy, assuming no other players suffer long-term injuries, you know, the Leafs will be basically carrying 20 or 21. They'll be right at the roster minimum. And if they come upon, you know, shorter term injuries, there's certainly probably going to be a game or two, or maybe many, depending on their injury luck, where they have to play short players just because they can't carry extra guys on the roster with the way things have gone.
Chris, when does the rubber meet the road with Michael Hutchinson in the backup goaltending position?
I think it's hit the road already.
Okay.
I mean, it seems crazy to say it's two starts. But, you know, we did have an episode with Jonas Enroth a couple years ago. He only got four starts as a Leafs backup and six appearances in total before he was shuttled elsewhere. You know, I think what factors in with the backup goaltending, as with everything, is that they don't have a lot of cap space to bring on another player. I don't know how many guys that we would identify league-wide that are, you know, say in a number three position that they could target, as it were, but you know, they can't afford to bring in a goalie making any amount of money just with all the cap stuff I'm talking about, unless it involves trading out a player who's making some money. So that's all part of the complication here and might save him. I know they like the person and the player, but you know, the reality is when you're the least backup, you get tough starts. I mean, the mm-hmm. four he's tabbed for this month, none of them are what I would deem an easy situation. Playing some of the best teams in the league. His next one, I think, will be Tuesday in Boston, and then a week from tomorrow in Montreal, both on the second end of a back-to-back. So, you know, they're going to be looking for some results from him soon, or, you know, if it continues where they're blowing leads and he's in for four or five goals a night, you know, I have to believe they're going to try and find another solution there.
So come up, give me a scenario though, CJ. So they would have to trade. So they would have to trade someone away with him in order to create enough space. The kind of likely candidates for that job who would be better than him or might be better than him. You're going to have to lose some. You're going to have to lose some salary as well. How do they like that? That sounds like it could be a bit tricky to accomplish. There's my my learned adjective today. It could be tricky. Tell me how you do it.
I think what's tricky is finding someone who's clearly better. You know, there's probably other guys, but they're going to be similarly, you know, unproven or just, you know, not have shown it over a huge body of games that they can perform the way the Leafs probably would optimally want from their second goaltender. You know, one way they do it, I guess, is they could trade with a team that retains salary on a goaltender. So that's one way to have it so that the Leafs aren't taking on, you know, too big of a contract, but could still get, you know, a decent quality number two goalie. You know, to do that, the Leafs are probably giving up draft picks or one of their young players. You know, so they're going to have to be giving up something they would probably prefer not to make that sort of trade happen. And, you know, I suppose they could even try Kazimierz Kaskisuo, who's been playing in the American Hockey League for them for a few years, played playoff games last year. You know, I don't know internally if they view him as a strong option, but, you know, that's one that could be done without any real maneuvering. You put Hutchinson on waivers, send him down to the Marlies if he clears, and bring Kaskisuo up. But you know, let's call it what it is. They're in a bit of a bind.
Yeah.
They don't have a lot of room to maneuver if this doesn't work. And as a result, you know, that probably suggests his rope's a little longer than I said when Jeff earlier, originally asked the question, just because I don't feel like there's an easy way out of this. So they're probably going to go out of their way to try to make it work. And so, you know, this is going to be a very strange year for roster management. Going to make for some good talk radio, I think, because all kinds of things are going to come up, and they're pretty tied to the roster that they've started the year with, and unless they, you know, consider some sort of big trade, which I don't believe there's any reason to think they're going to do, they're just going to be handcuffed, you know, throughout this season.
Yeah, and look, on one hand, it seems like, you know, kind of nuts to be sitting here wringing hands about backup goaltending, but it is, you know, like it's going to be significant enough, and. Like I would think of Kaskisuo. Did I just pronounce that right?
Close enough.
If they thought he was an option, CJ, would he not have been in the mix? You know, because again, that's an affordable and close to home solution to that problem, which would in theory give you a bit more flexibility. Wouldn't have he been in the conversation already?
Probably. You know, because I didn't get the feeling at training camp that he was truly under consideration to win that job. You know, I could just see where it comes to a point where it's the one card they have to play. It's the one thing that they are able to do relatively easily, and maybe they give him a chance. You know, I would think we're going to see a fair bit more Michael Hutchinson before they get to that point, assuming Hutchinson stays healthy, because that you know, Kaskisuo is basically in the number three spot right now. If there was an injury for the Leafs at the goaltending position, which is probably the one thing that could sink the entire season or could really, you know, throw a fly in the ointment is, you know, if Freddie Anderson went down, but even if Hutchinson went down, you know, that really complicates what's already a difficult picture for them. But, you know, I think we're probably going to see, just looking at the scenario, I think it's logical to conclude we're going to see him play a game or games this year in the NHL, because, you know, I just think that the circumstances might demand it at some point. And you know, he has had some decent AHL years. There's just not a lot there that screams, you know, definite future as a full-time NHL backup, but, you know, he might end up with a good opportunity and run with it. We've seen it happen before with goaltenders. You know, once upon a time, James Reimer wasn't viewed that favorably, you know, really. And you know, he took a chance with injury and, you know, has run with it and had a, you know, 8 or 9 year career now as an NHL goaltender.
What are they going to be facing tomorrow night in the Bruins? Same old with the Bruins. Any new wrinkles?
Well, sort of, but you know, the Bruins, they've got one line clicking like crazy, and it's the line that we've talked about, you know, for the last number of years, whenever they play anybody. But then beyond that, they don't have a whole lot going on in their lineup offensively. You know, I think even down John Tavares, the Leafs stack up favorably below that top line. It's the question of how they handle the top line, how they perform against Bergeron, Pastrnak, and Marchand. And, you know, they're also starting their backup goalie, Yaroslav Halak. And you know, Boston's kind of the opposite example of what Toronto has going on in that, you know, Halak and Tuukka Rask, if you look last year, they split starts really evenly through the season, you know, not quite 50-50, but close. And then, you know, that left Rask fresh to have a long playoff run. And it's something he's been quite open about believing, you know, led to his resurgence last year, is that he was used a lot less during the regular season. I think in a perfect world, the Leafs would love to establish that kind of dynamic around Frederik Anderson, but because of the cap issues and the fact that, you know, the few of the goaltending options they've tried in recent years haven't worked out as well as they'd hoped, they haven't been able to do that. And they're using their number one guy as pretty much as anyone in the league is right now.
CJ, we're going to let you scoot. Appreciate you doing this as always, my friend.
If everyone listens to that hit, they're going to think everything's on fire. The Leafs do have a winning record.
So wait, really? Hang on a second. Wait a second. Okay. Everything's not on fire? What? Come on.
It's funny. It's the tone, and I'm contributing to it around the team.
No, you're not. It's I mean, people are.
What's the over under on firing Babcock? Come on, Chris.
Yeah,
let's
go. That's actually a good one.
Oh man, I think he's going to see through the season. We're going to see what happens in April. May.
That's a bold prediction, my friend. I don't know.
Just be thankful Mitch Marner signed.
Oh man, we'll find something.
Yeah.
Take care.
All right, boys.
Chris Johnson.
Refusing to play into local hysteria.
No.
What's wrong with him? Come on.
It's not that much. Is there that much hysteria here? I don't see that much hysteria.
No, this friend, look, it's going to be one of those years, though, because the expectations are where they are. The sense that this will go on, that this is just the beginning of some great new era, is not quite there anymore. You know, the reality of the salary cap has kind of sunk in for a bunch of folks. And there are things that could go wrong, like Frederik Anderson getting hurt, that could sink them.
Well, you know, and one of the reasons that I think that Michael Hutchinson is such an issue and something you do talk about is because the single most important player in this team is Freddie Anderson. The single most important player in the playoffs for this team is going to be Freddie Anderson. And anything that makes Freddie Anderson's life easier in the regular season, such as who his backup goaltender is, that has, I would argue, more long-term implications than just about anything else.
Than a lot of stuff we're talking about, yeah.
It really does. Like, yeah. John Tavares is going to be healthy again. There will be other injuries, but he'll be healthy again. You're not going to see John Tavares' injury manifest itself in the playoffs. But you could, if you don't have a backup goaltender, see fatigue manifest itself in the playoffs. And to me, that's why I understand people say, you guys spend a lot of time arguing about the backup goalie. Well, it's because the backup goalie in the NHL now plays a significant role.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've seen nothing from Michael Hutchinson in two games that would make me want him to play two consecutive games for me, or three consecutive games.
Yeah, and you want, like, they would dream of a situation like Boston's got, where they've got, you know, it's not quite 1A and 1B, but it's close enough. Yeah. Yaro Halak is a guy who could start in the National Hockey League for some teams. So they would love to have a guy to take that amount of the burden. And so they could be competitive on the nights when he played. You know, he could even steal a few for him. They have not had that luxury. And again, with this cap, and people don't want to hear cap, but they're tricky is the right word, right? It's going to be, you can't just say, let's bring in another guy. The another guy is going to cost you more. A guy who would be better than Michael Hutchinson is going to cost you more on the books than he's going to cost you. So in order to bring that other guy in, you're going to have to ship money out, or you're going to have to give up young players' draft picks in order to have somebody hold salary back. So there's no painless solution. You know, they don't have the guy in the Marlies who can just say, well, here's the guy. He's the heir apparent. That guy's not there. And they don't really have, they can't take on money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it is not an insignificant problem, all joking aside. And I think it's also a problem that if it continues, unless Hutchinson finds himself in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be really hard to fix.
Yep.
It really is.
Playoff soccer, MLS playoff soccer, returns to BMO Field Saturday for the first time in 22 months. As a matter of fact, the last playoff game we saw in Toronto was a game in which Toronto FC beat the Seattle Sounders for the MLS Cup. The Reds will be taking on DC United tomorrow at BMO Field. Dwayne DeRosario, TFC great Canadian national team member, former Canadian national team member, will join us. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and 360. This is from our friends at Baseball Central. John Smoltz of the MLB Network will be part of the pregame show ahead of the Yankees-Astros game tonight. Smoltz was great last night.
He's great, isn't he?
He's really good.
There are some...
For the life of me, I don't understand. People on social media seem to have an issue with Smoltz.
Really?
I mean, they view him as being, you know, he's not analytically friendly, yada, yada. But go back and listen to him break down George Springer's at bat last night. And yeah. talk about how CC Sabathia talk about how Masahiro Tanaka pitched him and what Springer was looking for.
Why is
there are times where he's Tony Romo-esque?
Here's a question for you. Why is it that there are great baseball players who have made great broadcasters? That because you know, and again, the reason I'm saying that obviously they know the game, mm-hmm. but you know, if you make bazillions of dollars as an athlete, you don't have to become a broadcaster. You don't have to do anything,
yeah.
you know, and it's a different art, right? You have to work at it. But, you know, Ron Darling's tremendous, you know, Alex Rodriguez is doing it. Pedro does it. You know, these are guys, mm-hmm. these are not just the, you know, the backup catcher on the bench who had a lot of time to watch, like the guys who become managers. They're superstars. And yet these guys are great broadcasters.
I think a lot of it is I covered those guys, the names you mentioned, I covered them a little bit and I was, you know, I covered Darling for the end of his career when he was in Montreal, Pedro. I'm not going to turn, and Smoltz, of course, was part of the furniture in Major League Baseball for years. There's an element of intellectual curiosity to those guys. That doesn't mean that they're going to the Louvre or that, you know, they're reading Kierkegaard or anything like that. But there's an element of curiosity about how people go about their business in the game that I think really explains why guys like that are so good. And it, you know, I having spent a lot of time around Pedro, it doesn't surprise me that Pedro is a great TV analyst because that was Pedro after every game.
Yeah,
that was him. That's the way he was. A-Rod had a ton of issues. Everybody knows about those issues. A-Rod had a ton of issues, but you know what? If you asked A-Rod about a game and he felt like talking about it and he was in a good headspace, he'd talk your ears off about the game. Mm-hmm. So I think there's that aspect.
But they also, you know, and it must be just like, again, A-Rod, given those two contracts he signed, right? There won't be any tag days for A-Rod. Like he could do whatever he wants.
Same with Pedro.
But these guys have committed to making a second career and being really good at it.
Right. Right.
Because it's not, you know, however, you know, intellectually curious you are, however skilled you are, you still got to master that other thing. And those guys are, you know, like I say, they're great broadcasters, like, period.
Yep. We have a pair of tickets to give away to this Saturday's Toronto FC versus DC United playoff game. And we want you to be the fifth caller through at 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, *590. And you could win a pair of tickets to see Toronto FC take on DC United and Wayne Rooney tomorrow at BMO Field. Earlier today, John Tory, the mayor of Toronto, was joined by Dwayne DeRosario, Toronto FC community ambassador and alumnus. And the city of Toronto helped kick off Toronto FC's 2019 playoff run by declaring or proclaiming tomorrow to be Toronto FC Day. And John Tory and Dwayne DeRosario also raised the Toronto FC flag at City Hall and the courtesy flagpole, the podium roof at City Hall. We're very pleased to be joined by the aforementioned Dwayne DeRosario. Dwayne, thanks so much for joining Stephen Brunt and myself today. Greatly appreciate it. You know, the last time TFC played a playoff game here or played a playoff game. It was of course, they're winning the MLS Cup against the Seattle Sounders. So it's been about 22 months between playoff games. That was a great, obviously a great moment for this franchise, the great moment for this franchise. What are your expectations about this playoff run? How is it setting up for Toronto FC?
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the show. I mean, if we could repeat, as you mentioned, that 2017 when we made the playoffs and went back to back, we obviously lost in the finals the year before, and then the year after that we took our revenge and ended up winning it. So hopefully we could do the same this time around. Obviously we're up against a very strong DC United team that has a lot of that's solid all around the field, starting with their goalie right through their defense, midfield, forward. So it's going to be a real challenge. But thankfully, we were able to secure home field advantage, which is a massive plus for us with our home fans. We know they're going to be ready to go, and in fact, I'll be at Brazenhead early before the match, getting the fans excited, getting us all pumped up, and then when the players feel that from the fans and that passion, emotion, I'm sure they'll translate that onto the field.
Dwayne, what changed for this team in the last obviously the last 10 games of the season, but really at the end of the season when they seemed to kind of find themselves and find their identity? What if you were going to pinpoint a couple of things, what would they be?
Yeah, well, I think the coaching staff had to mess around with the lineup due to injuries, international duties, and stuff like that throughout the season. So there wasn't really much consistency in terms of lineup, and we weren't able to catch our rhythm in the middle of the season. But thankfully, we went through a 10-game unbeaten streak, and kind of found our rhythm back and started to create that belief. And hopefully we could continue that throughout the playoffs starting tomorrow.
Hey, Dwayne, now we know that Jozy Altidore is, I mean, that people talk about a game-time decision. He is a legit game-time decision. If Toronto FC doesn't have Jozy Altidore, how does that change what they might do tactically against DC United? Or does it have more of an impact on what DC United has to do against Toronto FC?
Yeah, no, I think we just have to worry about us. DC United is going to obviously have their tactical plans tailored towards if Josie's playing. And if he's not playing, obviously it's a big body, a big presence up front, a player that has experience and is definitely contributed to a lot of success this year. So if potentially he's not fit, then, we'd have to adjust accordingly. But, being in a situation like that just means it's a great opportunity for someone to step up and create a legacy for their own self here in the city. So it's a great opportunity, especially to be home. If we're away, it might be a little different conversation, but being the fact that we're home, we have our 12th man with the fan support.
Not taking this game for granted at all, Dwayne. But I think because of the last 10 games, especially, there's a lot of people around the league saying this. That the TFC is, kind of a dark horse contender here that despite what the kind of scuffling for much of the season, they're not a team you want to play in the playoffs, and they could go some distance. What do you think the potential is here beyond this first game?
Well, it's limitless because it's a different format this year. So it's not home and away. It's one game and leading right up to the finals. So if they win this game, they go to the conference finals, they win that, and then it's three games, and you're in the finals. So that's pretty impressive when you look ahead and you see potentially got three games to possibly be lifting the trophy in your hometown. So obviously it's the first step is a very good DC side again that has a lot of players like Rooney that could change a game any given second, any space, any half a chance he could bury it. But the potential is real. We get by this game, anything is possible. It helps further build the confidence with our team, and it helps further we get that potential home field advantage. So, there's a lot of pluses going into this game.
What do you see from Wayne Rooney in MLS? Like, what does he bring at this stage?
I mean, I think we've seen it. We've seen some highlight reel goals. We've seen some from past the half. We've seen him do some... he's still got the I would say the venom to score goals. He's still lethal anywhere on the field, as he's shown throughout his whole career. So he's a guy you have to pay a close attention to for sure. Especially he knows what it takes for big games. I'm sure he's looking forward to the match himself, and he's playing these games, so he knows what it takes.
Dwayne, we would be remiss if we didn't ask you about what the Canadian men's team did against the United States, winning 2-0 earlier this week. Of course, you a long-time servant and a very good servant for Canadian soccer. What went through your mind when you saw that win, and how much progress has this program made under John Herdman, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's been so far so good. The win and result was amazing, you know, to witness that and to see the way the players played, and they left it all on the field. They played on the front foot. They weren't backing off. They went after the game. They pushed the initiative, which is all positive, you know. In U.S., obviously, they have a huge mountain ahead of them because I've, you know, not taking away anything from Canada with the result, but you know that was definitely a different hearted U.S. team that I've seen, and you know we were able to capitalize on that, and a lot of it has come from our doing and the way we started. You know, we had some great chances early on, and I think that shook them up a little bit, and thankfully we're able to, you know, to limit their chances and finish ours in the second half. And you know, it's a great booster for not only for the players but for the country and for Canada soccer. You know, so hopefully you could keep that up and make it to the Hex. And then, you know, the Hex is a whole another conversation in itself. But we just got to get there. We got to keep playing on our front foot. I think we have the potential right now. We've seen the potential that we have within the squad that we could do. Accomplish some amazing things, and we just got to keep that creativity, that positivity, and the one-touch soccer, and I think the results will come our way.
Yeah, like I don't want to curse anything, Dwayne, but you know, and again, you look at that potential on that team and the talent. You talked about the belief, which you certainly saw in that game against the States. You know, the holy grail has always been qualification, right? You know, not just, you know, making the Hex, sure, but getting to a World Cup on merit. You know, like, can you close your eyes and imagine that side you saw the other night playing in a World Cup?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's massive. I mean, 2026, obviously you host it. So you know, if we could get in and create some havoc before, I think it would be great. Not only for the players on the field, but also the legacy and for the generation following beneath to have more opportunities to play at the highest level, to be recognized and to raise the profile of sport in this country where it deserves to be.
D-Roy, we're going to let you scoot. Thanks so much for doing this, man.
Thank you, gentlemen. And again, I'll be tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I'll be at Brazenhead. We'll be doing a march to the game, so join me there for a big game tomorrow at 6 o'clock, BMO Field. Let's go Reds.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, all right, Dwayne.
Dwayne DeRozera again. He'll be at the Brazenhead, where a lot of people will be, 4 o'clock. And there will be a march to BMO Field. Head of the 6 o'clock game. Should be a really cracking atmosphere.
Yeah, and this team's kind of, you know, they've snuck up on people because of the way the season's played out, right? It was kind of, I say, they scuffled a lot, but those last 10 games, they've been untouchable. And, you know, you kind of look at the way that playoff format works now, and you kind of look, at least in the East especially, you know, they got a shot here, Jeff. Like,
yep.
It would help a lot if Altidore is healthy. That does make a significant difference. But, they could do something here. But it's funny, you know, it's interesting after talking to Dwayne about the Canadian men's national team. I know we had John Herdman on earlier in the show. That's the moment, you know, again, I remember the World Cup in Mexico when Canada won. One time Canada qualified, but it was a different world. You know, it's just a different world then. Different world, this different country, and a different sports landscape in this country. And, you know, the one thing I want to see, you know, before I'm done with all this stuff.
Canada scores a goal in the World Cup.
Well, Canada in the World Cup, you know, and on merit would be better. Like, they'll get in as host in 2026, that would appear. No one's ever confirmed that. But,
right.
Yeah, because I in this environment with the interest in the game now and the soccer IQ and the and how important
soccer
it is.
Soccer culture.
And it's young, you know, and it's the, you know, it's the most important game for a lot of young people in this country now in terms of what they watch, and to have your own be able to watch your own team in the World Cup, not just to kind of cling to other soccer nations.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean you're going to win it, but that opportunity.
Yeah.
I think that again, I know that I'm not comparing it to the Raptors winning that championship last year, but I think it would be a watershed in the same conversation. It would be a watershed moment.
Well, it's the one sport in the country, and I'm talking about the men's soccer team, that's never had the spark. Everything else has had the spark. Basketball's had it. Women's soccer's had it. Pick a sport. Bobsled's had it. Any sport. And bobsled, not a participation sport, obviously, but the men's soccer program. And even Toronto FC winning the championship, that's different because that doesn't resonate in Montreal. It doesn't resonate in Vancouver.
No, there wasn't a national celebration.
No disrespect to Toronto FC, but it wasn't a national there wasn't a national celebration around that.
But there's guys on that Canadian team from every part of the country, pretty much, right? And it's like the Olympics, your country. But it's also, again, that ground has been, the ground is ready for this thing to happen now. It's ready. There's an audience. There's an audience for the World Cup. There's an audience for the Euros. There's an audience for Premiership. There's an audience for Champions League. People watch that stuff. They know.
Mm-hmm.
And to see their own guys on that level, and again, maybe a couple of games, maybe three and done, right? It might not amount to anything. But I think that's a game changer. I really do. I think that would be a tipping point for the sport in this country. It's already past the tipping point. It's already happened. People always, we lived through those decades when people kept saying, well, when's soccer going to happen in North America, and kind of dismissing it, it happened. It's already happened. You can have a soccer conversation on this show any day, any show.
Just go down on 6 o'clock, 6:30 PM, any place you live, go down and look at the fields, see what sports are being played.
That's right. So it's happened. It's just, from a national point of view, just needs a moment of confirmation. Yep. And that's what that would be.
Absolutely. Mr. Brunt and myself will take a very quick break. We'll be back to put a bow on it. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Pal Ken Rosenthal's on ZTube right now talking about the Yankees' decision not to push harder for elite starting pitching has cost them in the postseason. This, of course, ahead of tonight's Yankees-Astros game. Do you think Brian Cashman would like, maybe not a redo on not trading for Marcus Stroman, but do you think he'd like a redo on that interview he gave where he essentially said Marcus Stroman
wouldn't make a difference, right?
Wouldn't make a difference for us? You think he might? You think maybe Marcus... Has Marcus Stroman tweeted about this? Maybe we need to find out.
Could you look while we it'd be hard for him to resist this bait, wouldn't it?
Oh, shoot, I'm blocked.
Well, if there are any of the people out there, you can just send Jeff a message and let him know if Marcus Stroman has commented on this. Because, he can't resist this, right? He's not going to resist. And again, I'm not... Look, I think Marcus Stroman is probably not as good as people in Toronto think he is, but he's better than what Brian Cashman suggested he is. And when you look at what they're left with in their rotation at this moment, as they're about to be probably eliminated in the LCS, which is not where they thought they were going to be, he would have helped. He can handle big games. He can handle big moments. Again, he's not, he's not Garrett Cole.
No,
but I think he would be. Like James Paxton is a great pitcher when he's on, and he's great and he's healthy. But, is he better than Marcus Stroman? Like, I'm just trying to think of who they're like. Masahiro Tanaka, I'm not going to blame him. I think he's actually pitched really well.
No, and Masahiro Tanaka has been a good postseason servant for that team. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Joel Sherman wrote this last week, and I just, you look at his postseason numbers, he's right up there with the Yankees greats. And you just don't. It's because there hasn't been World Series after World Series after World Series for him. But no, Masahiro Tanaka is certainly the guy, if I'm the Yankees, I want out there. But yeah, they stuff-wise, they're running out too many guys who just don't measure up.
Their bullpen's laden with stuff, right?
Loads of stuff
in the bullpen. But if they had one more guy who could give them five or six really competitive innings to balance out the kind of starting pitching they're going against right now. And I know it's not pitcher versus pitcher, but and then it turned into a bit of a battle of bullpens.
Yeah.
You got way more of a chance, don't you?
I'll tell you the other thing too, is he's not a starting pitcher, but I know when people, when the Yankees were in town for that final series, you talk to them about Dellin Betances. Do not underestimate how much the Yankees were counting on having him, if not 100% ready,
mm-hmm.
that they were counting on him at least being able to give them an inning or two innings until he hurt his Achilles.
Yeah.
And I really do think that that's one of the reasons that they didn't make the move for Stroman.
Yeah. Well, because then you got a crazy embarrassment of riches, don't you?
Yeah, and then you're essentially running out of places to use guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well.
Game 5 of the ALCS tonight. The Yankees and Astros on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet. The Astros can punch their ticket to the World Series, where they will take on the Washington Nationals. That's it for us this week. Tim and Sid are next. Nate Burleson, NFL insider, joins the boys. And Matt Devlin, the TV voice of the Raptors as well. Raptors open their season Tuesday. And we'll be there live at Scotiabank Arena. In the meantime, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.